Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Volusia County School Board meeting. Today is Tuesday, October the 8th, 2019. Would you please stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you once again, and glad to see everybody here, and also appreciate those listening to the meeting via the internet. I begin every meeting by introducing the people that are sitting around me. So today we'll begin with a representative from District 3, school board member Linda Cuthbert. Next to Ms. Cuthbert from District 5, Mr. Ruben Colon. Next to Mr. Colon, our school board attorney, Mr. Ted Doran. Way down here in the far right, your left, that is our agency clerk, Ms. Connie Spire. Next to Ms. Spire from District 1, Ms. Jamie Haynes. And next to Ms. Haynes, our vice chair of the school board representing District 2 as well, Ms. Ida Wright. And between Ms. Wright and myself, our esteemed superintendent, Mr. Timothy P. Egner. And my name is Carl Persis, and I am serving as the chair. Items for approval on this agenda are items 1.03, 2.02, 5.02, 6.01, 18.01, 18.02, 19.01, 20.01, 20.02, 22.01, and 24.01. We have multiple public participation times. You can speak on items before we approve the consent agenda. We also have a time certain at 5 o'clock. We say time certain, but what that means is it won't be before 5 o'clock, but as soon as we can get there. For any item that is of general interest pertaining to public education, we have a total of 15 minutes allotted for that window of time at 5. Time will also be provided for public comment on any action item that on which the board will vote. And you also can speak and address the board at the end of the meeting for items of general interest pertaining to public education. Our district vision statement is to ensure that all of our students will graduate with a superior 21st century education, and I can tell you we have over 4,000 employees trying to achieve that goal in various ways every single day, and we really commend our employees for the great job that they do. We also take a few minutes at the beginning of these board meetings to share any good news board members would like to share. And I'm looking at you, Ms. Cuthbert, with a big smile on your face there. So what is it that you'd like to share?
I had the pleasure of visiting Indian River Elementary and Donuts for Dads.
Ooh.
The cafeteria was packed, absolutely packed with dads and granddads. The kids were so proud of their fathers to be with them. It was a pleasure. It was nice to be as one of the few females in the room, and it was adult females anyway. Yeah, yeah. And it was great because Mrs. Lee, or I think her name is Patterson now, is the School Lake Cafe manager, in which I'm going to serve lunch with her next week. I had her son in class, but she had a special line for the dads and a special line for the children. Dad's got special treats, handmade muffins. So, but it was a wonderful time. And also a thank you to United Way for our kickoff breakfast Friday morning at the LPGA. So thank you.
Good stuff. Yes, Mr. Colon.
So I had the pleasure of attending Donuts with Dads at Osteen Elementary.
Oh.
And just as you described, it was very powerful to see the fathers come in with their children and the mothers. There were several moms, which, you know, again, they probably play the role, or at least they were playing both roles that day, so that was very admirable. Also, congratulations to the Pine Ridge Manufacturing Academy. They won the first annual, I believe, Robot Brawl.
Wow.
at the Jackie Robinson. They got first place, so that was really, really exciting. And just lots of great things
nice
happening.
Things. Nice things, sure are. Ms. Wright.
No announcement today.
Yep.
Unfortunately, I was traveling, so I didn't get a chance to go to my
school. Well, I certainly get it. Ms. Haynes, anything you'd like to share?
Yeah, I had the opportunity last night again to go to the DeLand City Council, where they recognize the STAR students for all of the schools in DeLand. And I know that Deltona does this also. And I think it's a great opportunity because it's one thing when our kids get recognized here or just in our schools, but when they actually go out and go to, you know, a council meeting for the whole city or the area they live in, and they're recognized there also. And even though it was pouring down the rain last night, they all came, and they were all so cute, and their parents got lots of pictures of them. And Jessica Davis started that, the one council member in DeLand, and it's just a great treat for those kids to come and be recognized by the city.
Yeah, that's so nice, so nice. Ms. Cuthbert, what, Mr. Egnor, what was that conference we all attended to in Palm Beach?
Yes, it was the Consortium of Educational
Foundations, yeah.
Consortium.
And we had the pleasure of being there. And
Palm Coast, though. Don't let them think we traveled.
Oh, Palm Coast, that's right.
Did I say Palm Beach?
Yeah, Palm Coast, big difference. So we went, and that was great, sitting with Futures people, and Futures got a lot of commendations, I should say, and it was great because we went basically because the K-12 chancellor was the speaker, and I thought he gave some excellent comments about where we are in Florida and all the good things that is going on in regards to public education in our state. So excellent time there and time well spent. All right, we have now on item 1.03. The minutes have been sent to board members as well as for the September 10th, 2019 workshop and work session and the September 10th, 2019 regular session. Are there any additions, deletions, anything about those minutes? Then those minutes will stand approved as they were received. Mr. Egnor, we're on item 2.01. Are there any agenda changes?
Yes, there is. I would like to recommend that item 8.01 be pulled for further review. The gist of this is it's a grant, and we discovered that some of the items we used the grant for last year will not be approved by some new rules for this year, so we have to go back and restructure our request.
Got it. Okay. Then moving on to item 2.02, do I have a motion to approve the agenda minus item 8.01?
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve the agenda amended.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert. And a second by Ms. Wright. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed. And the agenda has been approved. Our next item is 3.01. This is a recognition, and this time we are recognizing our finance department. And I see people moving forward, and Ms. Muller, are you going to take the lead on this one? Okay, so please state your name and titles as you speak.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Chairman Persis and board members and Mr. Egnor. My name is Deb Muller, Chief Financial Officer. I have with me here today Bertie Trawick, our Finance Director, and Don Fortes, our Finance Specialist. Mm-hmm. And we are recognizing them for the award from the Government Finance Officers Association. It's the Certificate of Achievement in Excellence in Financial Reporting. This is for our CAFR that was submitted for June 30th, 2018. And I can't say enough about the amount of time and effort and perfection that it takes to pull all of this information together, not just our financial statements, but a lot of information about the district. And you know, we're doing it at a time when there are a million other things that are trying to be accomplished as well. And I know that
I could see them nodding their heads when you said that. A million one, maybe.
They'll have nightmares tonight, right? But no, and, you know, Dawn just does an outstanding job, and, you know, I can't thank her enough for what she does for us. And just the submission of this award, which is not mandatory, and so it does take a lot of time, and I just want to recognize her and Bertie for her help and express the appreciation that we have.
Yeah.
The job they do.
Would you all like to just share just how long have you been doing your particular jobs, Bertie?
4 years.
How many?
34 years.
34 years.
This is her
wow.
last
I think
year.
That deserves a round of applause right there. And you're still smiling. I mean, that's like incredible. And Dawn, what?
I'm going on 15 years.
15 years, and all in the finance, mm-hmm. Finance department. So you all have been on the same team for a while, and it's such a good team, Mr. Superintendent. So we just want to say thank you. We appreciate everything that you do each and every day. Is there any comments that you'd like to make any further?
Dawn is solely responsible for this.
Oh, okay.
She deserves all the recognition.
All right, Dawn. I want to say that it's the entire finance department. It's the award is really on behalf of the whole department because we all work together as a team.
Yeah.
And we all contribute.
Yeah.
So it's on behalf of the department.
That is very nice of you to say. Yeah, that's very nice, always giving credit to others. But from what I'm hearing, you're a major, major force in there, just by Bertie saying you deserve all of the credit. So once again, we thank you, too. And just want to say thank you.
I do think, to Dawn's point, that it just really is a culmination of all the work that they do.
Understood. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. All right. Do we have any cards about any item on the consent agenda? No. All right. Are there any items any board member would wish to remove from the consent agenda? Seeing none, do I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
I approve the consent agenda.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. And the second?
Second.
Thank you, Mr. Colon. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? And would any board member like to comment on any item that we just passed on the consent agenda? Ms. Cuthbert, yes.
Well, it's nice that our oversight committee is here today. And I know Seabreeze track, what we had to do for that. What we thought in the very beginning when we passed the half-cent sales tax that when we decided, you know, our high school field tracks were really necessary to replace, how exponentially more expensive they are. They've almost doubled, sometimes even tripled in price. So thank you for helping us keep an eye on that. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert. All right, we are now on items. Let's see, am I correct here? 15.01, Superintendent's Announcements. Mr. Egner.
Yes, sir, thank you. Announcements, Teacher Duty Day, Student Holiday, Monday, October 14th. Let's hear it from the crowd. School Board Special Meeting, Tuesday, October 15th, 2 p.m. in this boardroom. Teacher of the Year Reception, Wednesday, October 16th, 4:30 p.m. at Champion Elementary. Volusia County Council, PTA, Welcome Back Breakfast, Friday, October 18th, 8 a.m., Emory Riddle Aeronautical University Student Union Event Center. Next regular school board meeting, Tuesday, October 29th, 5:30 p.m. in this boardroom.
Thank you, Mr. Egner. And our next item is item 16.01, and this is a district update, and we do not have one at this time. Okay. Just want to make sure before I move on. All right. Then we are going to continue with item 18.01. I wasn't sure whether the recipients of this recognition are here yet. Mr. Aiken, would you know? Yeah, I knew we were running a little fast. So, okay, Would you just give me the sign when everyone's here? Because I want to make sure I do not forget. Now, what about the next recognition, National School Lunch Week?
They're here.
All right. Good. And is Heather here? There you are, Heather. Hello. Will you want to come forward and bring whomever you need to? Good. Thank you. And if you would just give your name and titles before you speak.
Heather DiMiole, Schoolway Cafe Director.
Valerie Hansen, Schoolway Cafe Assistant Director.
Nice to see you both.
Thank you. We have a slideshow.
And Heather, just pull that microphone stand towards you. Yeah, there you go.
We have a slideshow for you.
So this presentation will be to recognize National School Lunch Week.
Yes. Good evening, Chairman Persis and Mr. Egner, Superintendent, and the school board. We appreciate you giving us time tonight to address you, and we're asking for a recognition and a resolution to recognize National School Lunch Week, which is October 14th through the 18th. So Schoolway's mission, as a reminder, is just to positively impact students by serving delicious, healthy meals. And just a little bit of history. In 1962, President John F. Kennedy created the National School Lunch Program, a week to promote the importance of healthy school lunch in a child's life and to impact it has it inside and outside of the classroom. And from here, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Hansen so she can finish the presentation with a few facts.
Okay. This year's theme for National School Lunch Week is School Lunch, What's on Your Playlist? This is a concept to which students in all grade levels, as well as adult stakeholders, can relate. The theme is tailor-made to spotlight the wide variety of flavors, dishes, delivery options, and tastes of today's school lunch. A playlist connotes a wide range of taste and is completely individualized, just as school lunch is increasingly playing to the customized, made-to-order tastes of students. Schoolway Cafe serves items that kids want to eat with increased choice and customization. To help us celebrate National School Lunch Week, we are holding a video contest in which contestants post a short video showing themselves singing or rapping about their favorite Schoolway Cafe lunch and or their favorite lunch lady or lunch dude. All staff and students may participate. Contestants can win Hard Rock Live tickets to a show, a family-friendly show, Fitbit smartwatch, an Android tablet, a Bluetooth boombox, or a portable DVD player with headphones. Schoolway Cafe positively impacts students. We serve approximately 30,000 lunches daily to our students, and we have over 400 school lunch heroes who love our students and work hard for them every day. All our menu concepts are new items are student tested. We require an 80% student acceptance rate before we serve new items to our customers. And some of the new items we introduced this year so far include a stuffed turkey bowl, a grilled chicken club, roasted chicken and cornbread, chalupa with Spanish rice, and a grilled chicken Caesar wrap. We have some new exciting items coming as well. They will be coming to a cafe near you very soon. We're serving chicken wings with a variety of dipping sauces, boneless chicken wings, again, with a variety of dipping sauces, Italian hoagies, Eisenberg all-beef mini hot dogs, yakisoba noodles for our Asian bowls, and fish tacos. Don't forget to follow us on social media, and to see all National School Lunch Week activities, you can use the hashtag NSLW19.
Nice.
Thank you.
Like
we look forward to seeing some of you next week.
So like that lunch presentation.
Thank you so much. Thank we appreciate you. The time.
Well, you know, I can't let you leave without asking you. You know what I'm going to ask you.
I know. I'm ready.
You're ready?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, that's even better. So give us an update of where we may be going with trying to move away from single-use plastics and straws and trays and styrofoam. And
so we're piloting it at Osceola Elementary School in 2 weeks. We had to wait for all the equipment to come in. A group of us went to the school to evaluate exactly and meet with the principal and the manager to assess what would be needed for such a pilot. So all the biodegradable trays have arrived, and we were testing recipes, and we actually did a soak test to see how the trays held up with even water just sitting on the tray to make sure we weren't creating a large mess for the kids, not eating fast enough, and leak. You know, we were looking for leakage. Those tested out very well. And so I was with Robinson today, and we're going to start it in 2 weeks.
Wow, that's great news. And so I guess whatever trays it is that you're decided to try, I guess they've been used in some other districts?
They have been used in surrounding counties and the biodegradable trays. So we just want to try one school, and then we'll slowly roll it out to test out in some other schools, different grade levels, on a very small pilot. And so basically what it is to eliminate as much as we can styrofoam or single-use plastics, all the way down to we had to order equipment for dispensing of forks and spoons. So they'll only, hopefully it's a training with students too, only take what you need, and we'll no longer, in that school, we're testing out the not using of the packets that have the straws and the fork, or this fork, and the napkin. So we have napkin dispensers, self-dispensing forks and spoons, no straws, and they agreed to try with the drinking of the out of the milk carton.
Yeah, that's excellent. I just love that, only take what you need. If we can just get that into our culture, we'd all be better off, wouldn't we? Only take what you need.
We've also introduced this year some cardboard trays that will replace our polystyrene. Mm-hmm. And we have some for breakfast and for lunch. And the breakfast ones, you know, have a message, start your healthy day with breakfast. And the lunch ones have the meal pattern on it. So we are actually teaching kids. It has the My Plate symbol on it, but it also around the inside edge shows the meal pattern on how to select a healthy lunch.
Great. Yeah, that's
so we're trying
good.
To turn it into an educational
good.
Tool and then help the environment. And as soon as we get data on it, we can present the data on, you know, the diversion of trash.
Good stuff. Volusia County School System leading the way here. Yeah,
we're trying.
Awesome. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you again. Let's see. Do we need to read?
Yes. The superintendent recommends approval of Resolution 2019-38. Recognizing October 14th through the 18th, 2019, as National School Lunch Week.
Thank you. You've heard the resolution. Do we need to vote on this one? Yes, we do. Okay. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes. And a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ms. Cuthbert. Any other discussion? Everyone in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed? The motion carries. Now we can clap. Hey, all right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hansen. Thank you both. Outstanding. I'm looking for Mr. Aiken. I don't see a sign yet, so I guess we'll just keep moving on. And our next item then will be item 19.01, administrative appointments, human resources update. Maybe not an update, huh? But anyway.
We have some information.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah. So whatever you...
I would like to thank Kim McKinney for being the first among equals in HR while we advertise and search for a new HR director. And she's going to give you a little bit of an update in a couple of areas out of the department she's helping lead. And I thank you so much, Kim, for taking
thank
on
you.
This responsibility.
Yeah, thank
pleasure
you,
to
Kim.
Be here. As Mr. Eggner stated, Kimberly McKinney, Coordinator of Recruitment and Retention, Human Resources. Good afternoon, Chairman Persis, School Board members, and Superintendent Eggner. It is with pleasure that I am here today to present the following superintendent's recommendation for administrative appointment of Dr. Rebecca Sampson to the position of assistant principal at Taylor Middle High School. Dr. Sampson began her career with Volusia County Schools in 1992. She has served in the capacity of teacher and teacher on assignment. Dr. Sampson earned her doctorate from Capella University, her master's degree from the University of Cumberland, and her bachelor's degree from Florida Southern College. Her areas of certification are in educational leadership, social science, and exceptional student education.
Thank you. Would you like to just come forward? Just, I'm not going to ask you to speak. Don't worry. Because I know you weren't prepared for that. Since this will be your first administrative position, correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes, okay. Great. And I know Mr. Egner has some words of wisdom to give you at this point. So
he's setting me up.
Yes, I am.
The only words of wisdom I would have for a new position in a situation like your own is listen first.
Excellent.
Listen
Thank
first.
You.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And go out there and help as many teachers as you can.
That's right.
Second thing to do. That's the best thing to do. And now if you just turn around, stand up, turn around, face the audience, and let's give her a nice round of applause. Yeah. All right, you've heard the recommendation. Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you. In a second, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed. And congratulations once again to Dr. Sampson. And now, Kimberly, do you have more?
Now to continue with some HR updates. We currently have 44 classroom positions being advertised. School counselors, 2. Math teachers, 5. Reading teachers, 5. Art, 2. English, ELA, 3. Elementary, intermediate, 4. Elementary, primary, 5. 1 science, 1 history, and 16 ESE. Now, in an attempt to encourage more teachers to become certified in ESE, we are working with Title II to reimburse eligible teachers for the cost of the ESE certification exam or the cost of a subject area exam that would allow them to be dual certified to teach specific ESE programs. The test must be taken and passed during the current fiscal year, July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2020. We have already had multiple teachers request reimbursement, with many more communicating that they're going to take the test in the near future. More information about the reimbursement program can be found on the district website under Human Resources. As you are aware, we went live with Frontline Education's recruitment platform, which encompasses teacher and K-12 job spot on September 20th. We have had multiple responses to some of our posted positions, which is great news. Now for an update on the search for the position of Chief Human Resources Officer. The interview committee, consisting of 3 principals, an area superintendent, and several district administrators, reviewed all of the applicants for the position and have recommended their top 10 candidates to interview. The interviews will take place on October 15th and October 18th. Board, I will be sending those names to you along with resumes and cover letters that we receive. So I will get those out to you this afternoon for your review.
Thank you so much. Mr. Superintendent, I was just going to ask Mr. Superintendent to explain what happens after the committee makes their recommendations. Yes.
Yes, the committee will have the interviews, and then they are supposed to give me the top recommended 3. However, I'm flexible with that. If some of the candidates are very, very close, I would look at 4. And then I will conduct a personal review. It might be a second interview. It might just be a decision, depending upon how unanimous or lack of unanimity with the committee.
Yeah. Thank you. Ms. Cuthbert, you had a question.
Yes. Do you happen to know how many bus drivers we have out?
I do not, but I can certainly – how many advertised positions we have, I can certainly look
Mr. Aiken is in the back. 22, did you say?
Thank you, Mr. Aiken.
Okay. Do we have any in the pipeline?
Yes, ma'am. We have about 7 that are being trained.
Okay. Thank you so much.
In case everybody did not hear, we have 7 in the pipeline and 22 vacancies. Okay. Thank you. Anybody else have a question for? Okay. Thank you, and thank you for stepping up in this role. We greatly appreciate that. All right, our next item is item 20.01 and 20.02. We'll take those.
Take a picture.
Picture. Yeah, I was going to wait until the other recognition came in, but I'm not sure. Are they here, Mr. Aiken?
No.
Okay. Well, let's make sure they stay there. Can you all wait until we have the students and we'll take all the photos at one time? Okay. But we will get the photo. I promise you. And now, Mr. Pender, are you in the house? Yes, you are. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. All right. Well, good evening or good afternoon, Chairman Persis, school board members, and Mr. Egner. Today we have two requests concerning student discipline. For the first request, a recommendation is made to the superintendent that he request the board extend a suspension on students Alpha ID 1SCRB, 1WPOJ, 1PMTL, 1RZNK, 1RPBP, and 1UHKY from school attendance through October 29, 2019 for the purpose of further study and evaluation.
Thank you. Mr. Superintendent?
The superintendent recommends the board extend the suspension of students Alpha ID 1SCRB, 1RZNK, 1WPOJ, 1PMTL, 1UHKY, and 1RPBP from school attendance through October 29th, 2019 for the purpose of further study and evaluation.
Thank you. You've heard the recommendation. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. And a second from Ms. Cuthbert. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And those opposed, the motion carries unanimously. Mr. Pender?
All right. For the second request, a recommendation is made to the superintendent that he request the board extend a suspension on students Alpha ID 1QMUX, 1RSZP, and 1SHAS for school-sponsored transportation through October 29, 2019. For the purpose of further study and evaluation.
Thank you, Mr. Superintendent.
The superintendent recommends the board extend the suspension of students Alpha ID 1QMUX, 1RSZP, and 1SHAS from school-sponsored transportation through October 29th, 2019 for the purpose of further study and evaluation.
Thank you. You've heard the recommendation. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
Second.
Second by Mr. Cologne. Discussion. All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed. And the motion carries unanimously. All right. I will back up the bus here a little bit. That's a school board term. And we will stop and take a photo right now of Dr. Sampson. Dr. Sampson, are you still here? Yes, okay, let's get a photo. Next item will be item 21.01. That is the presentation by our Project Oversight Committee in their annual report to the board. Ms. Muller, I see you coming forward, and Sandy.
Yes.
And if everyone could just, again, state your name and your title before you begin speaking so people on the Internet know who it is that is talking. No, that's fine. We're due for a remodel anyway, so we just change some things around. I know.
We've tried, but she does whatever she wants.
I
yes,
know.
She does.
And she's never going to change.
Right? Yep.
And it's usually right.
That's true. Yes. Good afternoon, Chairman Persis and board members and Mr. Egner.
Good to see you again. And we have a very special presentation right here for you. We have the Project Oversight Committee third annual report, which covers July 1st, 2018 through June 30th, 2019. And as you can see, as we go through the presentation, we have some very beautiful pictures of some of the work that was paid for by the sales tax, the half-cent sales tax. That referendum, again, was approved for 15 years and was an extension of the previous sales tax referendum and was effective January 1st, 2017. And who we have with us tonight is the Project Oversight Committee. They were appointed by recommended by board members, and they provide oversight on the progress. They give us advice, and they put in a lot of their own time to help the district in this important work. Who we have with us tonight, and I just ask behind us if you stand up, but we have here Ms. Sandy Burke Bishop from Chop Shelf Properties. We have Mr. Mitch Ayton, who is the director of CRM Enterprise Portals and Learning Systems at Embry-Riddle. We also have Mr. Ben Flowers, who is the president and CEO of Main Street Community Bank. We have Mr. Jacob Lammers, CPA, with Charles Below and Associates. And last but not least, we have Jim Mather, who is the president of Paytas Homes. And I'd just like to take 1 minute just to say that you see on here we had another member of our committee, Mr. Richard Holtz, who unfortunately was deceased in February of this year, whom we were very sad, and he is greatly missed on our committee, and he contributed a lot, and certainly it wasn't just his professional contributions, but his personal, his personality that we miss as well. So just take a moment to acknowledge that.
Thank you.
And that being said, we also have one vacancy on our committee that we are still attempting to fill and take his place. There's also here you can see the Pine Ridge High School track picture. We schedule meetings every month, but it really depends on the schedule of the what is taking place as far as construction. Pre-construction, we do some tours of great new facilities as well, but these are our regular meetings that we had from September of 17 through this year. And from a financial perspective, before we get into the good stuff, we have our sales tax revenue, which is made up of the half-cent collections, which we receive on a monthly basis. And we have bond proceeds. You know that initially we had a $40 million bond. So as you can see here in fiscal year 17, that $61.7 million was a half year of revenue, but it also included a $40 million bond. And then in fiscal year 18, we collected $42.9 million in sales tax. And in fiscal year 19, we collected $44.8 million. We also have interest in other revenue and then our project expenditures, which you can see that by year, as well as our debt service on that $40 million bond. Our sales tax revenues by quarter. You can see that in fiscal year 18, we budgeted what we anticipated based on previous collections, but we collected more than $11 million each quarter. We did increase our projected revenues for fiscal year 2019. We exceeded those projections, and you can see in the fourth quarter of fiscal year 19, we actually collected $11.6 million as opposed to the $10.4 million estimated for that quarter. So we are pleased that the collections are coming in over our estimates because certainly the more money we collect, the more that we can do for the community of Volusia and Volusia County Schools. And I will turn it over to the other members to go ahead and talk about the projects.
Well, good afternoon, everyone.
Hey, Mitch, if you can just pull your microphone stand in. You can grab that whole base if you want to pull it.
Yeah. How's that? Perfect. A little better?
Yeah.
All right. So good afternoon, Mr. Persis and Mr. Egner and the rest of the board members. It's been a while since I sat up here. It's probably been a few years. And some new faces, and definitely look forward to presenting what we have for you tonight. I wanted to take a minute just to recognize Deb real quick. She's been a great liaison for the rest of the committee. She didn't introduce herself at the beginning, but she's been a very pivotal point in the committee and very good at providing the information as we requested it. So I thank you, Deb, for that. The report that we're giving tonight is our third annual report. It covers fiscal year 2019, so basically July 1 of last year through June 30 of this year. The committee as a whole, I wanted to kind of give the basis for how this committee came about. The committee was instituted as a requisite of the sales tax to oversee the spending of the half-cent sales tax. Our job is not to dictate how the money is spent, but to ensure that the money is spent in a way that's in alignment with the original project list. And so that's been our goal and our focus all along, is to make sure that as projects come and are being used or being completed with the half-cent sales tax, that they are in alignment with that, or at least in the spirit of the original project list. And so the way that we put our report together is basically looking at that original project list and aligning it with the expenditures that have been completed for that list. So as you go through the report, you should see some pretty close alignment with what it was originally to what the expenditures are to date. As Ms. Cuthbert mentioned earlier, we do recognize that changes occur. The cost of the track is a good example. The cost of construction has increased over time. And so when things like that happen, the district comes to the committee and points these costs out, lets us know that, hey, you know, the original budget was this amount, but because of the way external factors have influenced the cost, we need to make an adjustment to that cost. And so the committee hears those and makes improvements or approving and recommendations based on what we're hearing from the school district. So that's another task that the committee takes to heart. We do have to remain flexible, and we do understand that those things happen. And so we understand, you know, that the original project list, as well-intended as it was, that certain things require changes to that list. The first half of this year, we were focused on security. And so much of the spending that occurred earlier on in the year was focused on improving the security at our schools. That was in response to the Parkland shooting in the previous year. I believe that there is about 65 schools that have had improvements to their fencing, and I believe that the remaining schools are on the docket to be completed soon. So that's a change that in the timing of how that money was spent. And, you know, we recognize that needed to happen to move as quickly as possible to get our schools as secure as possible. So fortunately, that money was available to shift and move into that spending. So that was something that the committee felt was, you know, I think the board had recommended it. The committee agreed with that, and that spending happened. The second half of our year, we were focused on construction updates. And so quite a bit of construction has happened in the last fiscal year. Pearson Elementary obviously was completed last year, and so that was part of this fiscal year. And we're happy to be able to tour that building, and it's a beautiful complex, and we were very thrilled to see what had happened there. The excitement at the school was contagious, and you know, we were really excited to be a part of that. Moving forward, Chisholm Elementary was almost completed during the fiscal year. Good thing is we'll get to celebrate that one next year when we do this report. but it has since opened, and it's you know, a thriving school. You know, should learn from the experiences that they had at Pearson Elementary as to how to utilize the space there at Chisholm Elementary. We were able to tour Westside Elementary recently, which, again, crosses that fiscal year boundary. And the same thing there. It's a beautiful facility and very happy with the results that we got to see there. Some of the other things that happened aren't quite as exciting as the new school opening. Things like track improvements, lighting improvements, HVAC improvements, those types of things, all funded by the half-cent sales tax. We're very impressed with the amount of work that's being done and the number of projects that are being completed in a short amount of time. The other things, such as the ERP and the SIS system, very well needed. I happen to have worked on those many years ago here, so I understand kind of what it takes to implement one of those systems. And, you know, I feel like they're making good progress, and the last I heard is that they were maybe not quite on track, but moving in the right direction to get those implemented in the system. So very, very happy with that. I mentioned earlier there's external factors that influence the way the spending is done. Things like the Parkland shooting that I mentioned earlier. If you turn later in the book there, or in the report, there's the state legislation that affects the way that money is being spent. The cost of construction is always a factor. That obviously increases the costs that from what things were budgeted. And then, of course, charter school applications and how those will impact the future of the district need to be considered. As a whole, the district has basically done what they said they were going to do. And so I wanted to highlight in the last, in the recommendations and conclusions, there's the second paragraph there that kind of summarizes the opinion of the half-cent sales tax project oversight committee. As we complete our third year of oversight, we have a high level of confidence that the district staff continue to make sound fiscal decisions regarding the half-cent sales tax funds while navigating a complex and challenging political, social, and economic environment. We reaffirm our confidence that our tax dollars are being utilized in a responsible manner. And I think that's a testament to the school district and the staff that we've worked with. They've been very transparent and open about the funding and how it's being spent. We've been very appreciative to be able to work with them and to be able to have that open conversation. And I think that helps both sides of the coin there to make sure that we're all in accordance with what we're doing and making sure that the funding is being spent in the way that it should be spent. I think with that, I'm going to close it out. Do you have any comments?
I'd like to recognize Sarah Lee Morrissey and her staff. Are any of you there?
She's back there.
Incredible. I personally drive her crazy, so I need to tell you that they're beyond transparent and cooperative with us with the strangest questions we come up with. We come into this committee with our own businesses and our own foresight and our own silly thoughts or good thoughts, and they listen to us, which is what an advisory committee should do. We should throw things out. Maybe they're bad, maybe they're good. But we're trying to just kind of stir it up a little bit and be a little disruptive. Mm-hmm. And they deal with us. And they are very hardworking people that I appreciate their help mm-hmm. very much.
Yeah. Thank you for saying that, Sandy. Deb, anything further?
Well, again, I would just like to acknowledge, you know, that their time and effort that they devote to this committee is truly appreciated, and you know they are representing the citizens of Volusia County, and so that is very important work that they are doing, and it's a lot of funding, and we want them to know that it is it does have the oversight of this committee.
Mm-hmm. A comment on your thoughts about how things change and you have to react to those changes. As we all know, we changed the schedule for our students this year. Now, that wasn't known when we passed the half-cent sales tax that this would be forthcoming. And as a result of that, we have high schools who have fields that want them lighted because of the time change, and things get, you know, they get out later and they need those lights on. We saw a picture earlier, a photograph earlier, I think it was University High School, was it, with the nice bright lights and looking good. And, of course, you know, once you do something for one high school, Mitch, you better be having it ready for all of them. And so I appreciate you all having the flexibility and just understanding that. I also want to just echo what Deb said earlier. We thank each of you sitting back there. I can see some, most of you. Yes, hello. Thank you so much. I wish I could give you a bonus or double your pay, but even if I doubled your pay, it'd still be zero. So, I know all the board feels the same way. We greatly appreciate you taking the time. And as you all know, I'm sure, this next calendar year, 2020, with this bond issue, with us, borrowing the money and having the money there, that's, I'm sure, going to be a catalyst for many more projects coming. So I anticipate it's going to be even a busier year as we move on down the road. And I know Mr. Colon is keeping a careful eye on Deltona Middle School, and each of us has our own little pet projects, as you can understand, I'm sure. And Mitch, I see you're sitting there. Are you like the leader of the group, or
no? I just drew the short bow. No, we try to rotate around. I did not present the last 2 years.
My
colleagues did.
Okay.
And this year it was my turn.
So. I got you. Yeah. I got you. Well, thank you again. Any other board member? Yes, Mr. Colon.
Question. This was brought up when we were talking about the bonding. The school replacement list that we are working on is what was that of 2014. At the time, there were possibly some schools that would be replaced, or we planned or had an inclination and have since backed out. So those schools possibly may not have been added to the list. So in not making that change, for example, I talked about Stark, for example. I walked Stark to see what we were talking about. Stark needs a lot of love, but is not on the list because there possibly were other plans back when. So where is the flexibility to say, you know what, because, you know, all the schools in my district are really old. And so, I'm fighting for Stark here for a second. Relax. Is there a point where we could revisit this list based on current need? Because right now, again, Stark wasn't even on the map. We talked about
Turie T was on there, but
Turie T, and so
McGinnis.
You know, McGinnis Elementary, and so. At what point is there a point? I'll ask that question. You know, are we bound to this list from 2014, even though the needs may have changed? Or is it, I mean, how does this work? Or is there room for revisiting?
I think that it's a balancing act. It's just like a checkbook you have. You put money in, you take money out. You put a school in, you take a school out. Take a school out, can we put a school in? It depends on what it costs. So it's a constant teeter-totter of what do we have the money for. And we look to Sarah Lee and her staff and Deb to go, here's the crises. Can we move these around and bring us recommendations? Because we haven't been in every school. McGinnis, I'm with you. It's you have to look at it all. It's a huge, huge pie with little pieces.
So is there,
the answer
again,
is yes. I think it can be looked at.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
Yeah, I would say we would be going to be real careful, not about adding something, but taking something off, because the voters saw
absolutely
what we said that we were going to do. So we got to do at least that. Now, the good news is, we are collecting more money than what we had originally thought back in 2016 or whenever it was. So that's good. But, of course, the costs go up, too. But I like the way you said it, Sandy. It is kind of a balancing act. But I certainly agree with Mr. Colon and Ms. Haynes. And, you know, if we can add more schools to it, absolutely. Let's do as much as we can with the available resources that we have coming in. And that will all go before your committee to help guide us, too, with all of this. Mitch, did you want to add anything?
No, I think the spirit of the project list needs to be maintained. And you're right. The projects that were on the list that the voters approved, those are the ones that we need to stay focused on. Adding to the list, you know, is always an option. I think that's something that just needs to be presented. Plan needs to be derived and then presented to the group for review.
Great.
And then for recommendation.
Thank you.
If you look at our report, again, drove staff crazy. We insisted on staying in the same way it was approved. This is approved. This is what we did. This is approved. This is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
Here's money left. Here's money over.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that checkbook.
Yeah.
It is a checkbook with a balance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Well said, Deb.
Yeah, and I think it's important to point out that overall our district enrollment is not growing. What the purpose of this half-cent referendum was really to replace our current schools,
mm-hmm.
and to make those necessary upgrades and renovations that are important. So certainly, you know, I know that Sarah Lee's wheels are always turning and analyzing and reanalyzing. And so those are the things that she brings to this committee, and they take very seriously in looking at, you know, what changes need to be made. But certainly we need to stay within the spirit of the referendum.
Yeah. I'll tell you, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this and give you the compliment, everybody out there involved, includes so many. But when we did the superintendent search, and one of the survey questions was, what is the strengths of the school district? It was often mentioned facilities, nice facilities, new facilities. So, you know, those efforts that you're putting in and everyone, you know, it's noticed and it is appreciated. Ms. Cuthbert.
I just want to thank the Volusia County citizens and the visitors to Volusia County who pay for this extra half cent. We couldn't do it without them. And also, I know the state, we have to get permission from the state to replace the schools. They have to tell us whether we're allowed to or not, just like at Chisholm. The Building 16 was not allowed to be raised.
Yeah.
It had to stay. So we have a lot of regulation with the state. So, and then also, I'm very grateful that you made mention in your recommendations and conclusion list about our bonding, that $100 million bonding, because your input on that helps, at least it helps me personally, to be comfortable in the fact that we've made the right decision. So thank you for commenting on that.
And I think the superintendent had a comment. Yes,
I just wanted to thank the committee because your service, your voluntary service, adds accountability and trust to the equation. And when the public has made an investment and you do have these kind of private-public partnerships with people who are in the what they would consider the real world and they're monitoring us and partnering with us and keep us accountable, I think that adds trust that the voters made a good decision. So that is an invaluable asset to us, is your promotion of that trust. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you again, and we appreciate this. And onward, upward, looking forward to another year of building and improving our facilities. Yeah, we greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our next item would be item 22.01. This is a board action item, approval to submit the annual Florida Safe Schools assessment to ensure that the district complies with the Safe Passage Act of 2001. And this would be, I believe, Mr. Aiken, yes?
And Myers.
And more.
R.T. Myers.
Greg Aiken, Chief Operating Officer. With me is Mr. R.T. Myers, Chairman Persis, Board Members, Mr. Regner. Thank you for this opportunity for us to present the Florida, the FSAT, our annual safety and security update, specifically FSAT, because it kind of changed last year, so we're required to do some presentations. Before I turn this over to Mr. Myers, I want to tell you that Mr. Myers started July 1st, hit the ground running, has been doing an outstanding job as the new security point of contact for us. This year, and we're going to go over some good numbers. You'll hear some things that we've been doing, lots of mandates that came from Senate Bill 7026 this year specifically that have increased some workloads for our schools that we're looking at. Mr. Egner and I spoke about that earlier. Some of the specifically with our mental health staff as well, some of the threat assessments that they're involved in daily, and looking at a lot of the Fortify Florida stuff that we're looking at. This school year, just like last, each school does their own assessment, annual vulnerability assessment, and it's submitted to the state. So Mr. Myers will go through and update you on this. Mr. Myers.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairman Persis, Superintendent Egner, and school board members. I would like to just to start off by saying, you know, we have, like Mr. Egner said, hit the ground running with a lot of different new initiatives, some things that we need to follow. But we are currently all meeting all our deadlines with our state Office of Safe Schools have a deadline coming up for FSAT, and that is the reason for our presentation today. And really wanted to just review with you some of the recommendations that the schools are making in their assessments or in their surveys that they are taking. And I sort of want to review that with you a little bit. Some background information for you is 2001 legislation, the 1006.07 for statutes, safety and security best practices. We follow Senate Bill 7030 as well as Senate Bill 7026, and as well the best practices that we change as deemed necessary. One of the ones that we did, for instance, change this year was specific to the Code Red 2 lockdowns. If teachers did not want to utilize the Volo app that we're getting ready to re-roll out in November, we give them the option of pulling the fire alarm that has the same effect of a hold in place. So we've added some things into that just to change how we do things. In the past, when the fire alarm went off, we normally sent the maintenance guy to go check on the location to see if there were fire or smoke. Now we're sending the person with the gun to go see that location to make sure that it's safe and secure at that time. Just moving forward. In the next slide, the FSAT tool is there. It's used by every school in our district, including charter schools that make recommendations as well and fill out those surveys. They had a deadline of October 1 to complete that, and we have a deadline of October 15th to meet that as well. It goes through all kinds of different questions for the schools to make sure they're meeting the standards that are assessed by the state. And then we have a district FSAT that is also due at that same time. And it really is the reason for today's presentation is to get you to approve our direction of where we're going with what the schools are basically requesting. And then any board action then is reported to the state from there. As you can see, this is our safety and security program, certification process, and as well as all the different series that we go through and checking for compliance yearly. Every school will go through a security audit this year where they will have a physical audit. As in the past, they have had to just produce the documentation on file and only a certain amount of schools were. Now we are actually actively having each school and site go through an assessment, including charter schools.
So part of that assessment, let me just jump in real quick, is also doing a drill. No notice drill, and seeing how they respond. We're also going to show up early to see if we can get in anywhere to make sure if they're to look for any gaps in security as well. So we start that November 1st.
Yeah. All right. Safety and security manuals are produced, revised, and are done annually. Assessment workbooks, expectations of each standard, they have all of that. And they have 63 different standards that they have to meet. And we are updating those on our SharePoint site, which they have access to, and are uploading their documentation so that it is saved in a digital format. We have implemented district-wide an update to our Raptor visitor management system, which is Raptor. In the process, you can see there that the number of increase in the number of schools that are using it. It is time-consuming at times, where you know you may have a lot of visitors on a campus for a day, and you know we're working through that with each school when they have a certain events and things like that to help and assist them by providing them with extra scanners or giving them some solutions to how do they solve different issues. One of the issues that does come out of this that we did find this year, I noted it from the company, is that when a person scans their identification, if it comes back that they are a sex offender, it doesn't determine whether that person is a sex offender or a sexual predator. So at that point, the person at the front desk, the guardian is trained. If that goes off and that they're alerted, the guardian as well as the administrative staff go to the front desk, and then they go to the FDLE website to verify sexual predator versus sexual offender. Sexual offender has to be escorted on campus anywhere they go. Sexual predators aren't allowed on campus at all.
You know, what's unique about Raptor this year as well is they can do customized alerts. So if you have an angry parent or a concern up there, they can hit, and then that message goes immediately to the guardian and or the school administrative staff to come assist immediately. So it's another tool we have.
It's an emergency button that's on the top right-hand side of every
screen. All they do is click it.
It's on Raptor, so if the front desk clerk feels threatened or feels concerned, I'll hit the emergency button, and those emergency messages go to myself, Mr. Aiken, mm-hmm. As well as the school staff as well.
Does that go to you through your cell phone?
Yep.
Email, phone, and text.
Text. All simultaneous.
That's it. And we get them all kind of coming through.
I love it.
And that allows us to go back and follow up as well if we have to. If they have some issue, we can get involved. Okay.
Next slide. All right. And that just gives you some statistics there from the previous year, from the previous 2 years, as well as where we're at this year. Fortify Florida is fairly new for us this year. I can tell you that since 9:30, we received 490 different threats that have come into our district as far as threat assessments go. We have done 150 that were not a threat. We've determined that 248 of them were transient threats or they were just kidding. And we've determined that 92 of them were actually substantive threats. So just give you a picture of where our schools are right now. And I know that you're probably hearing that they're a lot busier with threat assessments being new to our system and new as a mandate in Senate Bill 7030. We dispatched our mental health clinicians 47 times last week to perform mental health assessments.
Alone, 47 times.
Our schools conducted 26 reentry meetings and completed paperwork for 126 threat assessments. Fortify Florida has generated 123 threat reports since July 1, which come at all hours of the night and on weekends. Just this week, we have received 28 Fortify Florida tips impacting 10 different schools at all three levels. All middle schools and high school teams will be officially trained in their threat assessments on Monday, October the 14th, with the elementaries being trained in the month of November. And that'll be with their teams as well as the law enforcement officers. And one of the things that is new, and it's new for all of our municipalities as well as our sheriff's department, is that it is required that law enforcement be part of our threat assessment team. So when there is a potential threat that's out there, we're having to call in outside from law enforcement if there's not a law enforcement officer on campus. And by Senate Bill 7030 and threat assessment procedures, a guardian is not considered a law enforcement officer.
Right. May I ask you,
sure,
the Fortify Florida, since that's the new one, when a person makes a communication, a threat,
provides a tip for us,
and it's a false one. Mm-hmm. Is there a penalty?
So it's anonymous.
The question is, it is anonymous. Mm-hmm. So unlike the sheriff's department, when they know someone made a false report, there's a big penalty. Mm-hmm. for that. But in this case, since you don't know who it was, and I guess what I'm asked, it's leading up to, are you seeing more false reports coming in?
I think in the beginning we saw a lot of false reports because once Senate Bill 7030 requires us to put it on all devices, anything that a student can access, and one of them is, so the way we determined that solution was to put it in the student's vPortal. Anytime they logged into a computer, they have access to Fortify Florida. So it's in their vPortal at home, on a computer at school, and some of them are finding it by mistakes. And there was one over the summer during summer school that actually he put it into the computer, put his name, address, phone number in there, and he got a visit, an unwelcome visit probably from a law enforcement officer with his mother trying to explain why he did what he did. And the simple fact of we need to educate our kids about the appropriateness of how to use the tool, what it's used for. And I can tell you as the tips are rolling in now, there seem to be a lot more that are have substance to them as opposed to in the past where they were making just generalized, just funny statements. And I'll give you, for instance, last Friday evening, we had one event of a student threatened to harm himself, and there were five or six different tips that came in at the same within the same 15 minutes because a student made a post and everybody saw it.
Yep. And then we immediately resolved that issue. Last Thursday we had issues as well, resolved in 10, 15 minutes. So it is working as designed, but some of them are still, you know, kids are going to be kids, and if you don't put their name on there, we can't go back and look at anything to answer your question.
Thank you.
And so where are we now? All schools now have at least one armed personnel in compliance with the legislation with Senate Bill 7026. We just graduated in July the new class of 11 guardians and a total of 59 guardians district-wide, including charter schools, 40 in our elementary schools, 6 in middle schools, 8 in high schools, and 5 in our charter schools. We currently have 17 SROs, mainly Daytona Beach, one South Daytona, 2 DeLand, and 2 in Orman.
One in Orman.
But they are really out there in our schools. We have, in some instances, in high schools, paired a law enforcement officer with a guardian just to assist in really making sure that we manage those campuses more effectively and just trying to develop that relationship between them. So when an officer is responding to something, to making sure that guardian is backing him up or being there. And so that we're working on some training in that aspect and working with the Sheriff's Department to make sure that we're training in pairs so that they have that experience together.
Yeah, we did a wonderful, this summer, did a wonderful group with the New Smyrna Beach Police Department, Fire Department on rescue with our guardian, myself and a guardian there to kind of show them what we look like and what we're going to be looking like when they respond. So definitely an educational piece for everybody to kind of be involved. Definitely middle and high school right now. Our middle schools, we have our guardians there except for 3 of those. We'd like to put a second one guardian there to kind of help out, to have a dual process there, and maybe have that one take some of the load off of our schools, have them trained in the threat assessment part of this.
And then safety of school buildings, grant fund, single point of entry, cameras, intercom systems, and alarm systems. Currently still working on that. We have our Code Red 2 drills that we have now implemented monthly at the recommendation of the MSD Commission as well as the Senate Bill 7030. All of our Volo geo fences have been updated, verified, and they're getting ready to roll that out back out to the schools in November. Currently working with Volo, and some of the schools that have already tested Volo are currently using it in their Code Red 2 lockdowns. For instance, we did test it with Volo at New Smyrna Beach High School. DeBerry has used it as well, but some other schools have definitely come on board with it. Now we would like to move forward and get the faculty and staff on that as well, and see if we can work through some of those solutions.
Nice.
Upgraded all schools to Raptor 6 and our visitor management system, and then Fortify Florida is virtually in everything that we do online. You can see it on our district website. You can see it in our publications, in the school publications, and advertised in our front offices.
you know, what's unique about Volo as well, if you have a threat, a Code Red 2 threat on property, automatically comes across the computer screen. So if our teachers are there, it interrupts it and says you're in a Code Red.
Really?
So, yeah, so they won't have to hear anything either. They'll be able to visually hear, see it and hear it and be able to respond quicker. And do that.
It
so
pops up a little.
Pops up automatically. Takes
on every screen. Red says Code Red 2 lockdown.
Yep.
So how would campus advisors, like how would they be included in the loop here?
Sure.
Somehow?
So they can download the Volo app on their phone, get the alert immediately. Him and I get the alerts as well. Then you can it pulls up a map, so it tells you what pin, who pushed that button, or actually swiped to indicate that they have a threat, and then it indicates. Geographically where that pin is pushed, and so the more pins you push, you kind of know where that area is at. The Guardian campus, the Guardian would actually go, or SRD would go as well, or SRO would immediately go, and then, you know, we would assess that and then take care of business.
And still currently working with them to upgrade their system as well. What we're trying to do is the law enforcement officer or the Guardian that is on campus trying to differentiate the pin color, so when they are responding, they know exactly where that person is located. So if the pin comes across in red for the person who initiated it, so we know where it started. They also need to know the location of the Guardian, where they're currently at,
right,
as they're responding.
Plus, everybody that has the Volo app on their phones can go back in and push whether they're safe, need assistance, or what they have, their status of where they're at. And that helps us make the determination as we have law enforcement, fire department, EMS responding as well. Help us ascertain, you know, what we need to do, what assets we need.
Mm-hmm. And Volo can, at the same time, push out messages to them, continue to shelter in place, you're okay, you're safe, everything seems to be okay at this point, wait for law enforcement. We can push out notifications to them through that system as well.
Including all clear at the end, so if they can come out, we can watch and do what we need to do.
And then the geofence piece, just to mention the geofence piece, it will not track you outside your locations. You can set a schedule for you of when you want it to turn on your location services on the app and when you want it to turn off the location services for that app. So, because I know that that was one of the concerns that was raised last year in the system of it being able to track you constantly.
Right.
So next slide. Last year's recommendations looked like, number one, that we would follow our best practices and really update some of our trainings and include our administrators. We are going to continue that practice. And letting them work through, some of the other administrators work through the assessments with us so that they learn better about our security protocols and they can see exactly what other schools are doing. The second piece would be to implement 7026, which we have successfully done, and apply the grant funding that we had 18 months to spend that grant on, so that's currently still being utilized. And then the halfpenny sales tax, looking at some capital outlay expenses, a single point of access, as well as the locking systems. And then this year's, based on this year's feedback from the schools, some of that is, the first piece is obviously installing and upgrading our new camera systems throughout our district. We've devised that a plan for elementary schools, middle and high schools, to make sure that they have coverage. Currently looking at cameras to make sure that when we're looking at a parking lot, for instance, we have the higher megapixel cameras on those parking lots so that if I zoom into it, I can have more detail than I currently have, because those old systems that are currently in there, some of them date back to 2004, 2005, and really some very lower megapixel cameras or lower end cameras that are, and the new stuff that's going in is very high quality stuff. So, and we are working on, we are currently meeting Senate Bill 7026 to where it's backed up for 30 days. So that requirement on the backup is 30 days that we do have in our backup systems, as well as we are moving everything to a cloud-based system as opposed to a DVR-based system, so we don't have failures in that arena.
Also live feed for responders as well, and that's what we're making sure we'll get done.
Okay, and the second piece recommendation there would be to review current locking systems or access control systems, whether they be keypad entries or they be buzzer systems where they can buzz the doors to get in. The third recommendation would be that we explore the RFID options for staff and student identification and also networking and printing capabilities for our RFID identification.
Yeah, can you explain that RFID?
What? RFID is
radio frequency. It's a chip inside of a car in your ID badge, so it's an RFID card. So
currently, when you see the badges or the keypads around the district, one swipe will get you in, or your access code will get you in as well. So you can utilize either one of those two systems. But RFID, looking at how kids get on the bus, middle and high school students have to wear their IDs anyway. If they can just get on the bus, swipe, saves them time, keeps the bus moving a little bit quicker, those kind of things, as well as we've talked to School Wave Cafe about being able to just swipe as they go through the line as well. And they are
really interested
in speeding up that process as well. So we're working with technology services as well as facilities to look at some different options, looking at some bigger network printers for, say, can I print New Smyrna Beach High School's IDs tomorrow, and they all go to a batch printer, print their name, picture, and then they can pick them up the following day or 2 days later.
Ms. Haynes had a question.
Okay, so on that, with the ID badges, do you have any data yet on, because we put them in secondary this year.
Correct.
So how is it working out? Are they showing up with their ID badges? Are they losing their ID badges? Are we enforcing ID badges? What's happening at the secondary world? And is it by school?
The high schools that I have visited and tried to access, some of them are implementing it better than others. I can tell you that schools that are on it, and I know my son at Glen High School, he forgot his badge one day, and I got the phone call, and they told me they had to give him a sticker for the day because that's how the way they identified him, and they knew that. So different schools are implementing it differently, but I think they all have their different solutions to it.
Yeah, middle and high schools, we just purchased the software and the printers for them and badges. So they're now printing all of those and getting those ready to go. So that's kind of like where we are there. When we do our assessment starting in November, that's exactly what we're going to be looking for.
And to add to the thought, because I really do like the thought about, kids scanning when they get on and off the bus, because we were all out there on the first day, and I was at an elementary school, and, you have pre-K, kindergarten, and first graders that do not know the code to type in, and to top it off, they don't even know letters and numbers yet to type in, okay? So that is a huge backup, and it does get better, but it doesn't get better, all right?
Very true.
And then I was also at a middle school where no one knew their lunch number, and the lunch lady handed me the forms and said, can you help out? And I said, yes, and I stood there, finding children's names on a thing and telling them their lunch number, and so if they could scan for lunch. But I think we need to broaden it a little. Like, when we think about vPortal, the whole idea was one sign in, so why not Media Center?
Yeah, we are looking
why
at
not, right? If they're coming to an event for basketball and things like that, or that's how you're knowing that they should be on that campus. I think we could, let's not limit ourselves, but I like the thing of they scan the ID.
Yeah, great idea, and we are open to that as well, checking out books, and, I don't know whether we do much of that anymore. But we would expand it. Okay, I don't know. I haven't been in school for many years, 50 or so. But
check out a piece of anything you
sure.
check out.
Sure, yeah, equipment. Yeah, and that's what it would be on the RFID. It's not an identifier. It's a unique number that ties back into our system who they are, and then it has all the data base basically on that. And we welcome expanding as much as we possibly can to use it so the students know that they have to have it then to be able to do what they need to do.
Even discussions of the student ID being if the student happened to be suspended for that day and tried to enter the bus, couldn't get on the bus, it won't scan his ID, and it would be able to tell the bus driver why.
The
badge.
Expanding, if you're loading them up on a bus to take them to a football game.
Field trip.
Sure.
You know everybody got on that bus to go on that football game, and they all got on the bus to come back.
That's right.
Football game. Just some things like that.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Myers, go ahead.
Last one, number four.
And number four, just implementing the ID badges for all students in secondary schools. Yeah.
So
just spoke about that, I think.
Okay.
I have a couple questions.
So discussion.
if a code red is called at a school, and I saw where you have to have a drill monthly, can that be counted as a drill?
So code red and code red 2 are two different things. So a code red is just a lockdown. So they can go into a lockdown for a multitude of issues. Something happening off property that places us with law enforcement activity outside the campus has nothing to do with us. We would go into lockdown just so students aren't moving around until law enforcement resolves the issues. A code red 2 lockdown, that's the drill we're practicing, so we can have our students respond effectively, getting into their hardened corners. Teachers responded effectively, making sure they shut their lights out, make sure the doors are secured and locked, and then, you know, we start doing what we need to do from our standpoint. I'm not going to give all of it out, but, you know, how we would respond to that code red too. Two different things that we would look at. So we go into lockdowns. We could go into lockdowns, you know, daily at some point in time. We have in the past few years where we've every day for several days we've been into lockdown for a different reason. Normally it's outside of our control for law enforcement, but sometimes it's internal because we have an angry parent or trying to find a student or something, so we may secure lockdown and then find what we need to find.
And he's saying every day at some site in Volusia County.
Yeah, not everywhere. Not every campus, site. Right.
But does it – I was in a code – red to last Thursday.
Right. Beach High School. Code red, lockdown.
Yeah, it was definitely a code red.
Yeah.
And it worked beautifully.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could hear a pin drop.
Mm-hmm.
Does that count as this month's drill?
They could. So we can do that and count that for it. Yes, ma'am.
I'm trying to reduce the number of interruptions in education.
I agree. And that school actually sent in their after-action report, which we actually asked them to do as well. So we can review that. And then they look at the basically the good, bad, the ugly, right? And so what can they improve on? And then we review those, and if there's any recommendations based on what they provided to us, we give them some more recommendations. But, yes, they could count that.
Okay. And our code red 2 monthly drills state mandated?
Mm-hmm. Well, from the commission.
Okay,
that is
so
correct.
It is required. It's not our rules.
No.
Based on the MSD commission, the sheriff that leads it from Pinellas County, his – understanding of it is that it's not up for debate. It's pretty clear in the statute that says that you should be doing a code red 2 drill monthly. And if he said if there's any discrepancies from that, you're sadly mistaken.
Yep. Same with the fire drill.
Okay, because I've heard that some people think it's just Volusia County doing it, but okay, it's state.
Mm-hmm.
And also when I saw all the wonderful things about Raptor. Now, when you go back to that gentleman, your visitor and offender photo, is that just Volusia County or is that nationwide?
So this actually can pull from any state.
Okay, it can be pulled from any state.
Right, so we've had several, and we get alerted on every one of these, and it pulls it up just like this. And so it identifies us, and then we can go back in. It's kind of hard to see, but there's another button down here says click here, and it will take you to what state it is, and it tells exactly what he is, predator, offender.
No,
so we have to do the research.
Sex offenders?
Some are what this does alerts us is as an offender.
Okay.
So then we have to go back and look at it, whether it's an offender or a predator, right?
Okay, what if it's just someone who has a felony?
Yeah, not at all. We don't track any of that through the system at all. Mm-mm. Yeah, this is not designed for that. This is just designed for, from an emergency standpoint, how many visitors on our campus. So if we go into, we have to evacuate or lock down or none of those things, we need to account for every person that's on that property.
What it also does is it will, there's a lot of John Smiths in the world.
Right.
And it may alert on John Smith, but you're looking at a picture and it's clearly not the gentleman. So you have to actually verify that it is the person.
But we're not checking for outstanding warrants or felonies or none of that. This has nothing to do with that.
Because that happened at Port Orange Elementary
last week. Yeah, so that was totally different. But that individual didn't have his ID badge. That individual was defiant.
Okay.
Correct. Didn't want to give us his name. Wanted to come on property. So, I mean, that was handled by law enforcement. And sometimes that happens. If you're compliant with us, then, you know, we'll follow what we need to do.
Got it.
Unfortunately. Outstanding warrant.
Mr. Cologne.
All right. So you mentioned so all of our middle schools, with the exception of 3, have school resource officers, you said, correct?
some middle schools. So we have eight middle schools that have guardians, and we have Ormond Beach, Southwestern Middle School, and Deltona Middle School. Those are the three that have SRD, or two SRDs and one SRO. The rest of middle schools have guardians, except for Taylor Middle High, which is an SRD, but it's a middle high.
When did we pull the SROs out of Galaxy and Heritage?
So what we ended up doing, if you remember last year, board presentation in March, the sheriff actually made a recommendation to do a pilot at four schools. So we pulled them at, test of my memory, New Smyrna Beach, Creekside Middle School, Silver Sands, and High Banks. It was the fourth one. Thank you. And then based on that assessment, the sheriff this year wanted to pull four more per our contract. We have nine SRDs that are in our schools, high schools and then two middle schools. And then we staffed those additional four schools with guardians this year. And that was presented during our presentation June or July.
It was presented at the time for the pilot, but I didn't know that they had expanded it.
They did.
Especially in schools in my district.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
My next question is, what are we doing about portables to make those teachers secure in their portables? Mm-hmm.
So, very good idea. Our question, we have ideas that we're exploring. From a security standpoint, if we have the single point access, nobody should be able to come in. Those doors should still be locked, just like any other portable that we currently have. We have some thoughts on what we would do internally, and I can talk to you about those afterwards, because I don't really want to make it public on everything we would do in a portable. But we do have a process put in place for that.
Are blinds considered a part of security for a portable, or is that optional?
That's not necessary to have blinds. Are not required by any statute or law or any of those things. We what our standard says is that if you have those, then you close those. If not, then you just still need to respond to that area.
So how would we have a hard corner if we have no...
And I can talk to you about that afterwards, because I can tell you how we would do that. Right.
Okay.
I can tell you about that.
And then the statement of some schools do it better than others leave us up to vulnerabilities. Mm-hmm. And I think we just recently saw some vulnerabilities mm-hmm. because of some schools that do it better than others. And mm-hmm. to be quite honest with you, that is yesterday's news. I think that moving forward... And I guess I should look this way. You know, this is our issue every time we talk about, you know, whether it's uniforms, whether it's badges, whether it's whatever it is. You know, some do it better than others. And I think that, as we learned our lesson last week, there is no room for that. And I think that the message should be driven that, you know, all of this, because this is all great on PowerPoint, but if it's not followed through, if it's not put into place the way it's designed, you know, with continual feedback, of course, mm-hmm. you know, this looks good on paper, but it's not going to save our kids. So those are my thoughts. Again, I'm sorry to look, I'm kind of looking that way now.
No.
But, you know, it's non-negotiable, and you know, I can't speak for anybody else, but I, you know, if the schools in my district aren't doing it, please let them know.
Why not? So, what I can say is that I will pick a school and test their security. I do test them. I take my badge off. I'll walk on the campus. I've try to do anything I can to get by them sometimes, and sometimes they don't know me. And I'll say good morning. I'll walk past a person with a badge on. When I finish with what I'm doing that morning, and somebody asks me for my badge, I say thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, I will walk to the principal. I'll discuss everything that happened with the principal that morning, and then kind of leave them with that, and then follow that up with an email to them about my findings, about how they can get better, and make some suggestions about some changes they can make, but also some directives on some things that they need to change immediately to prevent what's happening.
So the last two principal meetings, Mr. Egner has allowed us to have some time to talk about security concerns that we've learned from the previous month. We also had the principals come up and share their stories based on what happened on their campus and what they could have done differently. So we're going to learn each time something happens and moving forward with that. Our assessments coming up are going to actually test those as well. You're only strong as your weakest link, right? So security is only strong, and everybody has a part in that play. And so it's from the students to the faculty to our administrative staff to our guardians of law enforcement that are there as well. So we do agree 100%. We need to get better, and we'll get better.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Haynes.
So to piggyback off of that, do we have a list of non-negotiables that it's like there's no wiggle room here? You will do ABC.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. So at the last principal's meeting, Mr. Regner stressed my six non-negotiables that we have, and those were presented to the principals. They will be presented on this, I think it's this Thursday's AP meeting, to the APs as well, those six non-negotiables. And those are the items that we will be exploring between now and November 1st, and then definitely looking at them when we get there on November 1st.
So they've been presented to principals. They're mm-hmm. going to be presented to assistant principals. Mm-hmm. Will they also then, the expectation be that they are presented to staff
That's
on
correct.
Campuses so that they know also that these are non-negotiable items when it mm-hmm. comes to the safety and security? And
yes, ma'am.
Knowing that I know some of this, you know, we don't want publicized, mm-hmm. and there's a reason why. Is there any way at any point in time we can know what this is?
Oh, yes, ma'am, for sure. I will be more than happy to share that with you. I just ask that you don't share it with anyone else, and I'll be able to do that for you as soon as I get back to my desk or tomorrow morning, if that's all right.
I think you just have to give it to her in a paper copy.
No, I can actually I can send it out. It's just, and I'll just put a little blurb on it. It's not at 119. We just don't release it to anybody else. So I can give it to you.
Mr. Egner.
Yeah, and again, sorry for kind of saving up my comments, but we were smiling at each other because, and it's not a laughing matter.
No, no.
But we did spend considerable time at the last Principals Institute discussing this, and my final message was basically, you know, this is a very complex issue. You have to break it down into what security is, and then you have to come up with just a handful of things that are actionable. And you have to do those, fall back on your training, do them instinctively. And if your staff is not doing them instinctively, then that's a training issue, or it's a compliance issue, or it's an issue that has to be dealt with. And I think the final answer was quit overthinking these situations and just follow the six procedures. Now, that's easier said than done, because you're talking about thinking adults who are educators, and many of whom are saying, well, even if we do these six things, that doesn't guarantee universal safety. There's a million ways people can figure out how to hurt each other. My point is, that may be true, but don't think about that. You can't worry about it if they fly an airplane into your school, okay? There's not anything you can do about that. These six things you can do something about. So do the things you can. Don't worry about the things you can't. And that was very strongly delivered, and here's the follow-up, and there will also be the on-site audits, unannounced as well as announced. So it's a process that will stretch out, and at some point there has to be some kind of consequences for we can't be in a continuous training cycle and still fail. And this is not new news. It has been tweaked.
Correct.
But when I was principal, we were doing these drills, we had the manuals, mm-hmm. we had, you know, the whole nine yards going on, and the kids wore badges. And because it was Spruce Creek and we had Creek Connect, they already had the barcodes and they, you know, slid for everything. So it's kind of like, you know, deja vu all over mm-hmm. again. You know, we can't keep talking about the issues. We have to figure out what we've got to do and do it very, very well. And then there'll still be things that could happen, but that is how it works. Second thing I'd like to point out is it's not Fortify Florida that was such an issue in the last couple of weeks. It was typically adults who got reasonably panicked by false posts, by rumors, by things that were retweeted, reposted, Instagrammed, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it was also kids who, in some of the reports I've been reading, they wanted to see a lockdown. They wanted to get out of school. They wanted to have control. And we have so saturated the atmosphere with this discussion that especially students who are prone
you know, to be provocative. They don't have good filters, you know, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of the students, not all, because I'm not trying to tarnish, you know, or paint a group of kids negatively, but a number of these issues have been with special needs kids. And we know that their filters are flawed, let's say, to some degree. So people are overthinking the situation in the sense, well, that's Jimmy. He says crazy things all the time. I can't call him in each time. Well, yeah, you kind of have to. You know, we have to do a threat assessment. And so learning that is always a process until it becomes as natural as what you do when there's lightning and the protocols for that and maybe the heat protocols now. You just have to keep practicing it. You have to monitor it. And you have to go after it. Now, there is a reality, though, that I have foreshadowed to you that probably won't occur during my tenure, but I hope you keep thinking about it. And that is, this has become the new reality. I don't see it burning out anytime soon. I really don't. So that means if you see the reports, and I see Dr. Hall there, and she can probably send you the reports, and you heard some of the data that Artitas referenced, this has become a huge additional job. I mean, it was always part of the job. When Carl and I were doing it, it was part of the job. It was that much of the job.
Yeah.
Lately, it's been this much of the job.
That's true.
So how can our teachers, how can our administrators, how can our counselors focus on what they're supposed to be doing when they're doing immediate threat assessments and sometimes one or two every day and three or four to five Floridas each day? So I say that only because I hope you will consider that we may need some type of a social-emotional and / security administrative type, maybe a TOA, maybe an AP. The principals are crying out for this because they can't find times to do their real jobs because this consumes them. I also think we have to revisit the guidance formulas. You know, the more guidance counselors are engaged in these threat assessments and the reentry activities and all these things, how can they really do what guidance counselors are supposed to do? And so I know it's an unfunded mandate from that perspective, but at some point we have to face, you know, the reality that this has been a huge additional add-on task to the task that had always existed, and we have to respond to it. Mr. Aiken was apologizing to you earlier because he didn't get out some weekly reports and things. Well, he couldn't because we've been eaten alive with this stuff, you know, for the last week or so, as you heard from the number of reports. And I don't know how RT has kept up with it, but he's done a very admirable job, as has almost, you know, the entire staff. And where we see flaws, we're facing it directly and working on it. But I think we have to be realistic. And if we're going to be realistic, we have to know that the same people can't do 10 jobs, then 11 jobs, then 12 jobs, then 13 jobs. At some point, you're going to have an inefficiency occur. The breakdown is going to be, if not in this area, it means the other things they're supposed to be getting done will start having breakdowns there, and then that will foster complaints. So not wanting to get on a soapbox about this, but I think it's very important to hear what the schools are saying about the impact this is having on their operations and their assignment of human resources.
Well put. Thank you, Mr. Eggner. Did you have a comment,
and,
Mr. Cohen?
And I'm glad you brought up Dr. Hall because, you know, and I wrote to you, I had a parent write to me and say their child was at home shaking at night. You know, Galaxy had several incidents, and it almost seemed like every day they were getting a new phone call about a threat, you know, and unfortunately it has become our new norm. However, how do we, and this is the million-dollar question, how do you operate in this current day and also meet the needs of the kids who every day their school seems to be under a threat? And I think it's a fine line. I don't know what that line looks like. You know, look yep. over at Dr. Haw. So, I don't know when she sleeps, but, you know, I worry about that. You know, Ms. Cuthbert mm-hmm. mentioned, well, can we take advantage of an actual code red drill mm-hmm. to make that the, or excuse me, a code red event to make that, and you mentioned it requires that after mm-hmm. report. Well, mm-hmm. that almost sounds that it's optional, where we may be able to take advantage of that code red and provide and make sure that form is done so that we're not having additional code mm-hmm. red drills, you know, because the form wasn't, or the after form. So, mm-hmm. you know, again, I don't know what this looks like. I just, you know, I'm worried about the emotional state of our kids in, yes. and what they're having to go through, and how do we support them as best possible. Like mm-hmm. I said, you know, Galaxy, gosh, it almost seemed every day, and Ms. Chenoweth, she's just amazing, and I knew that those kids are, you know, I mean, she's totally by the book, so mm-hmm. if it's going to be done right, it's going to be done right with mm-hmm. her. But, you know, she's a rock star to me.
I did visit Galaxy because based on the social media stuff, I thought the place was on fire and no one was doing learning anything and people were all hunkered down in bunkers and whatnot. So I went over and the campus was completely calm. I tried to get in on the back side where the buses come in, where the gates are locked, and I saw a teacher in the hallway, and I said, oh, can you let me in? I can't get in. Superintendent. And he said, oh, he said, I'm so sorry, but that's not our procedure.
Awesome.
Our procedure is to go to the front. And I said, well, you know, I'm the superintendent, and we haven't met, but I think you'll be okay. No, I really want to be respectful about this, but you have to go to the front. I said, I have to walk away. Oh, I said, yes, sir, I'm really sorry. And I said, okay, and I turned for a second, and then I turned back around and said, hey, who are you, and what do you teach? I have the name and all. And I said, congratulations. I said, you did exactly what you were supposed to do. You didn't think about who it was at the gate. You just knew what people were supposed to do. I went into the school, walked the halls. It was absolutely calm. Kids stopped me. I thought there might have been a video, you know, somewhere, because it was like, hello, sir. And I was talking to him about, oh, yes. And I said, well, you know, we've kind of monitoring some of the bathrooms. Does that bother you? No, we just came from there. We get it. These kids got to stop doing this stuff. It's crazy.
These kids.
And I'm thinking, okay, where's the video? Because this is the commercial we need to de-escalate this. And I went into a beautiful science classroom where they had labs with refraction of light. There wasn't any panic. It was completely calm. So the point, I guess part of the point is, we have some parents who transfer their panic to their kids. We have parents who do not trust that when Ms. Chenoweth gives a message on Friday and a message on Monday, that that's not the complete story, that we're hiding something. And I think that trust issue would do a lot if people would go to authoritative sources for their information and turn off their Twitter, and then they would respond to official messaging and react accordingly, instead of staying in a perpetual panic over rumors. And, of course, when something happens someday and it's not a rumor, then you've got a different situation. But up till now, the responses in most places have been stellar, and people have done exactly what they were supposed to do. And it didn't matter because people still panicked because they were upsetting themselves. All the parents were lined up to pick up the kids at the end of the day, so I walked up and down the line there to see how many people would jump out and, you know, be panicked and talk to me like they were in social media. Not a single one. They were reading their books. They were being, everything was normal. So I think there's a reality, and then I think there's a picture that gets painted as a result of the number of calls and things of this nature. And as I indicated in my media conference I had the other day, we are damned if we do and damned if we don't. The more we do, the more some parents call in and say, well, I don't want to send my kids on drill days. It's traumatic to them. I don't want them to be exposed to this, et cetera, et cetera. Why are you all spending so much time with this? It won't work anyway. And then you have the other camp that if the school isn't basically a maximum security prison, they're thinking you're not doing enough. Where are we? We're right there in the middle trying to find the sweet spot. So we've got to do our six things. We've got to learn more as we go. We may have to respond with some levels of staffing, but we also need to get a better trust level in our communications so that when the message from the principal goes home, that's the only message someone needs to listen to, not a lot of others. So if we can do anything with orienting people to that, I think that would take a lot of the sting out of things.
Thank you, Mr. Egner. Mr. Aiken?
Yeah, and we met at Galaxy Middle School this morning, Mr. Myers and I did as well, and did some brainstorming on some options that we can do to try to it's already calm, but kind of calm the parents is what we were looking at, the fear factor outside of the walls, because I think inside it's all good. And so we did some of those things, and we're moving forward with that. So,
thank you.
And it was
for that reason
that I suggested to Mr. Egner, because we have really, really good presentations that come here before us, but the community doesn't see that. And so if we, and it's just a suggestion that I made, if Ms. Chenowood could look those families in the eyes, and mind you, it's going to be all 20 families, the same 20 families that come to the PTA meeting, SAC, et cetera, but look at them in their eyes and say, you know, to build that trust, because right now all they're getting is a robocall. Mm-hmm. And that robocall may not include all of the information because it's either not available, not accurate, et cetera. Being the school board member in my community, and on social media, I mean, I just get blasted and I'm able to say, it's okay. And they'll ask me, well, should I send my kid to school? Well, that's like asking me, should I go to the hospital? The answer is always going to be yes, because if you die and I told you no, I'm going to feel guilty forever and ever and a day. So if you are a parent and you don't feel that it's safe to send your kid to school, I'm not going to tell you send them to school. God forbid something happened. It's not happening. So, you know, maybe find a way to be more proactive in that intentional communication with the facts may help us to plan better, you know, moving forward. And it may be something we start next year. I don't know what that would look like. But just a thought to build that trust.
I do have to point out that one of the issues that comes up with disclosure is we're dealing with due process with minors. And in almost all these cases, there's also law enforcement involved in the investigation. And so we have to be very discreet about what we can reveal. Without causing a problem with the investigation or violating the minor's rights. So some of the concern about not full information is because that's protected information. Ironically, usually 3 hours later, a police report comes out and it tells you everything you want to know and the names of people who are 15 years old and things of that nature. But that's not up to us to do, and in fact, we couldn't do it. So there's a lot of education involved. And I like your idea about having some regional meetings on the topic, having some presentations about what we do and why we do it. I'm not sure that it'll have the desired effect. I made a point of going to the DAC that was held last week. And I thought, well, you know, this area has been greatly impacted, so everybody will want to know about this. I did a few minutes presentation. I said, let's open this up to questions. Room full of people, zero questions. Mm-hmm. Not a single question. So, again, the people who are communicating and retexting and tweeting and guessing and spreading rumors, they aren't seeking actual information or answers in many regards. Some I'm painting with the wrong brush. Many enjoy the drama, the power, and the impact it has, just like kids do in some instances. And so we just have to be careful how much we pay attention to that and change the way we operate for the 2% instead of the 98%.
Thank you again. Mr. Myers, anything further?
So we just Aiken? Need a recommendation to approve, and then
oh, that's,
go from
that's,
there.
That's supposed to say.
The I was getting there. I was hoping.
Approval of the Florida Safety School assessment
to ensure the district, I'm sorry, I went blind here. Writing's too small. To ensure the district complies with the Safe Passage Action of 2001, Section 1006.076, Florida Statute, District Best Practices Assessment 2019-2020.
Thank you. Ms. Schultz, do we have any cards on this item? This is item 22.01. All right, you've heard the recommendation. Do I have a motion?
So moved.
Thank you, Ms. Haynes, and a second from Ms. Cuthbert. Any further comment? All those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye, and those opposed, and the motion carries unanimously. Mr. Moyer, are you in the house?
Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Moyer. Are all the students in the house? Well, then we're going to go right to the students and to you. And I think I saw the last student walk in the door about 3 minutes ago. So
they should be ready. What item is that?
We're going to be on item 18.01. The resolution recognizing National School Bus Safety Week and our safety poster contest winners.
Well, good evening, Mr. Persis.
Good evening. Good evening.
Board. Mr. Egner.
Yes.
Have a bit lighter topic for us this evening. National School Bus Safety Week is sponsored by the National Association of People Transportation. It's held during the third full week of October each and every year. It's an active and evolving public education program and an excellent way for parents, students, teachers, motorists, school bus operators, school administrators, and other interested parties to join forces and recognize the importance of school bus safety. Each year, Volusia County Schools Student Transportation Department, along with the generous support of the Volusia County Sheriff's Youth Foundation, holds a safety poster contest and public service announcement contest for our students in grades K through 12. We had a very talented group of students to choose from once again this year. Our goal was to choose the poster and the PSA that best fit this year's themes. Red lights mean stop and keeping our students safe, respectively. We're going to display the winning posters on the on the wall for us, if you just want to take a look at that. You want to go names first? All right, I'll go that way.
Okay.
So why don't we do this? I'm going to announce the poster contest winners, and as I announce your names, please come forward and stand behind me so the board can see you up close and personal. Poster contest winners. First place, Laura Laurenberger, ninth grade, Spruce Creek High. Principal, Todd Sparger. Teacher, Michelle Leadhead.
And is she here?
I saw Mr. Sparger back there.
I saw Mr. Sparger.
Dr. Sparger. I bet you will. Yes, sir. Second place, Alea Urich, eighth grade, Creekside Middle School.
She's here.
Principals John Cash, teacher Jennifer Newell. Third place in the poster contest, Yarizel Okendo, second grade, Sunrise Elementary. Woo-hoo. Principal Ephraim Alejandro and teacher Mary Vanhoven. Vanhoven, thank you.
Okay.
All right. Next, our public service announcement winners. First place, Champion Elementary School winners Reagan Crawford, Iceland Edwards, Naomi Pound, and Tyree Williams.
Are any of them here?
Principal is Dr. Rick Inge and teacher Jacqueline Ouellette. Drake and doing a great job handing out money. Second place in the PSA competition, Deltona High School winner Brianna Valley.
Hey.
And a course, Deltona High's principal is Carolyn Carbonell, and teacher Samantha McElhaney.
Hey.
Third place, also from Deltona High, winners Corey Bailey and Kaylee Moorfield. And Ms. Carbonell is the principal, and same teacher, Samantha McElhaney.
That didn't make sense. Ms. Rona?
Can we give another round of applause to all of our award winners?
Yes.
And congratulations, and thank you to all of the students who participated in this year's competition. And thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Are we going to, Mitch, are you going to say anything else about School Bus Safety Week or anything before we take a photo of the students?
Yeah, it runs during the third week, so that's week after next. It's okay. Actually October 21st through the 25th, and there's a long proclamation. I don't know that you necessarily want me to read, but it's all about safety on school buses.
It certainly is, each and every day,
yes,
and not
sir.
Just
every
on
day.
School
yes,
bus. Okay, let's get another round of applause to all of our students and their teachers. And we, at this time, Mr. Aiken, if you could help, we're going to ask all the students. Yeah, I'm going to ask all the students to go outside with their parents, and we'll have a vote in just a second here.
We have a motion.
Students, parents.
There is a resolution.
There is a resolution.
There is a resolution.
Yeah, I know, but we don't have a motion on the floor yet. That's what I'm saying. So.
We'll stay right here.
Okay. Superintendent's going to make a recommendation.
Resolution, I recommend we approve Resolution 2019-37, recognizing National School Bus Safety Week and recognition of student transportation bus safety poster contest winner.
Indeed. And
so moved.
Thank you, Ms. Wright. And a second by Mr. Colon. I saw it coming out of his mouth. Everybody in favor, say aye.
Aye.
And those opposed. And the motion carries. Now we'll take photos outside.
All right.
Our meeting, and we're at the public participation time, and our first speaker is Elizabeth Albert. Hello, Ms. Albert.
Hi, Mr.
Nice to see you.
Nice to
Thanks
see you.
I thank the three of you who are will be speaking, Karen and Latoya. Thank you for your patience.
It was nice to wait to see the kids.
Get the students. I loved when we had the middle school girl and the little girl right next to her.
That
was just so cute.
Yep. All right, so good evening, Chairman Persis, members of the board, Mr. Eggner, and members of the audience. Interesting, and Mr. Eggner, thank you because you gave me my opening line tonight. You did, yes, sir. The same people can't do 10 jobs or 11 jobs. Now, this is not a sharp elbow, nor is it an attack or anything, but I'm trying to bring to light the circumstances that are occurring in our schools. Your teachers and your support staff are overwhelmed. They're absolutely overloaded, and we don't see any relief in sight, and relief is what we're seeking. So just to name a few things, we're having some troubles with technology. Mr. Cicchetti and I have spoken. Every time I email Mr. Cicchetti, he's right on it. He does the best that he can. But what we're finding over and over again is that we have two departments. We have the IT department, and then we have the facilities department. They don't really talk to each other very well. And so sometimes, more often than not, that causes problems in our schools, and we can't seem to find a resolution. And I wonder if everything that we do, if we were to stop for a moment and make every decision based on the impact that it would have on student learning, if, in fact, some of our choices would still be the same. I'm not sure that they necessarily would be. So, again, focus is an issue. I noticed tonight also that when the human resources report was given, we have 16 vacancies in ESE. I don't know that that number will get any better based on what I'm hearing from our ESE teachers. And, again, it's not anyone's fault, if you will, but it's circumstances and it's decision making. And so I wonder if perhaps we can make some different decisions to provide our ESE teachers, case managers, paraprofessionals some relief from what they're experiencing. They are overwhelmed. And interesting, we made a shift this week. Mr. Eggner and I talked about it to remove the early release Wednesday hour for the FTE count, which was the right decision to make. But what we didn't realize is that we were eliminating that extra hour that teachers had to get their grades done. And so I'm asking that a decision be considered to provide relief on Monday. Monday is a teacher duty day. Wouldn't it be a wonderful acknowledgement of the overwhelmingness that teachers are feeling if we held them harmless from any meetings or any planned goings-on that are allowed to occur in the first half of the day? What a testimony to the acknowledgement of what they're trying to deal with. Finally, a couple few things. You know, we're still having these code red drills. This is the last week of the grading period. We're having code red drills this week. How does that go with assessments and exams that are happening in our high schools? That doesn't make a lot of sense. Finally, I want to share something that came in this afternoon from a teacher at a middle school. She wasn't given a 24-hour notice on a meeting. She says that she's being told by a district person, I am from the district, and I am requiring you to stay in this IEP meeting. This teacher missed her lunch, and she was late to her fifth period class. Mm. Something to think about.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next speaker will be Karen Weinrich. Karen, hello.
Hello. I'm here just to talk about the start of this meeting and what time it was. It was at 3:30. I teach over in Port Orange. I left at 2:45. I got here right at 3:30. Meanwhile, at 3:30, my husband is just getting out of school in high school. He's unable to attend. And middle school teachers and students, as we just saw, they get out at 4:15. You know, we're trying to be engaged. We as teachers want to be engaged. We want to be here. I want to hear what you have to say. That security report was really interesting to me. Hmm. But many of us are unable to be here. So I ask that you consider not having meetings at 3:30. You know, if you want our input, it seems like you don't want the teachers here because two-thirds of them cannot be here at 3:30. Thank you.
Thank you, Karen. Our next speaker is Latoya Damon. Not sure I pronounced your last name correctly, but
oh, you did.
Okay.
Good evening. I also found the security report really interesting, and I'm here to address the peripheral harm of on-campus resource officers in terms of emotional stability, well-being, and long-term outcomes for our students. Due to the criminalization of normal teen behavior, if you look at the DJJ accountability reports from last year, I noticed that in-school arrests is on a rise in Volusia County, and most of those arrests are due to nonviolent misdemeanor offenses like disorderly conduct. Sorry, I'm really nervous. I'm not used to speaking in front of people, so. But that predominantly affects at-risk students, and so to have a student arrested and thrown in jail because they have a bad attitude is extremely harmful to our communities, and I wanted to know what kind of barriers and policies can be put in place to separate the roles of power and when it comes to disciplinary practices between resource officers and school administrators. What kind of resources do parents have and recourses do parents have so that they don't have to worry about their kids being arrested because of a miscommunication or a misinterpretation of their attitudes?
Thank you. Thank you. Good points. Any other cards, Ms. Schultz? No other cards. Okay. Then that public participation comment time has concluded, and we will move on. Are there any other cards for any other purpose? Okay. Just want to make sure I'm not excluding anybody.
Mr.
All right.
Chair?
Yeah. Hey, Ms. Cullen, can you just hang on just 1 second? And we are now, unless I've missed something, we're at the end of the meeting. Am I correct? 24-1. So now, Mr. Colon, you may.
So we typically don't respond to folks who come up and speak, but if somebody can reach out to this young lady and let her know some of the things that we're doing with the faith organization and the steps we're taking, that would be awesome.
And I agree with Mr. Colon, because Ms. Damon came to our last superintendent's meeting.
Okay.
And some of the questions that she wanted to address, we told her that was not the arena.
Yeah.
And so she had an opportunity to come meet with me to find out. She was a student. She's a student at Bethune-Cookman. And she didn't know I worked at Bethune-Cookman.
Okay.
But we had a very engaging conversation. I think she spoke to both of my colleagues, but they had some very interesting points. We told her she could always come to a school board meeting, but yes, if someone could follow up with that, we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, that would be great, and I'm sure that's an issue that we've had discussions, I know, back when I was a principal about certain things, like, you know, when does law enforcement get involved with a disciplinary issue at the school, and you principals, assistant principals need to every once in a while get a little refresher on that, because as you and I know, once law enforcement gets called or gets involved and once they take charge, then we can't go back and say, oh, no, you know, take the cuffs off, or it doesn't work like that. So maybe a little update for some of our folks out there would be helpful. Good points, good things. Yeah, we certainly don't want to get our children in the system unnecessarily, that's for sure. Wait, before you start, Mr. Clone, you have the floor. Is there any other comments?
Nope, that's it.
I think. Just wanted to make sure. Now, Ms. Haynes.
Okay, so this is our time to talk, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so I want to talk about focus, because I am hearing, from a lot of individuals, and we need to talk about this. So I want to start with ESE students.
Okay.
I mean, ESE students and ESE teachers and what's happening. So it's my understanding that IEPs were not loaded into the system, and therefore ESE teachers do not have, they cannot work the way they used to work with their students' IEPs because they were not preloaded. And I know Mrs. Gilliland's here, and if at some point she wants to address some of this, I'm happy, to hear
sure,
that piece.
Sure.
But I'm hearing that, yes, the IEPs are not loaded into the system. I have since then learned that for the midterm piece, that teachers are having to hand write their midterms, partially because of the IEP goals and things not being loaded into the system. and they're having to write that information out to share with parents. That's a different format than what they've had in the past. And then I recently read the document that was put out talking about substitutes in our ESE classrooms and what we're going to be expecting from people that are subbing in ESE classrooms, that we are going to put the burden of lesson planning and dealing with the IEPs onto these individuals that are, say, filling in for the 16 vacancies that we have right now. Wow. So this is me speaking from right. having been a teacher, having at one time taught ESE, also having been an academic coach, you know, all the different roles I've had where I've worked with people that have to do this. This is too much of a burden, all right? When they have a caseload, you know, let's start with the easiest. You know, I'm a speech teacher, and I may have, you know, two or three goals per student, but I may have a caseload, you know, yeah. of 100 students receiving speech services, mm-hmm. and their goals are not loaded in there. You know, that, and I sat in those focus meetings in my previous job role where I am sure those things were talked about, that like in preparing focus and creating focus, what are things that needed yeah. to be in the system? Because I know there were things in my previous role that we said needed to be in the system. Then as we go on from ESE, I'm hearing that classes are disappearing. Teachers are losing access. I heard this week alone, because remember, teachers are trying to do grades, that now their kids are gone. They lost access to their grade book, and they can't tell teachers, you know, you're missing this activity that I need in there so that I can give you grades. There seems to be a lot of glitches, and for the amount of money, if you go back in here and look at the amount of money we spent and how long, and we kept putting it off. We were like, we're not ready yet. Let's put it off a little longer. We've now rolled out a system that's not working. I mean, kids are losing access to programs. Like, one day they can log into their program. The next day they can't log into the program. The directions were, we'll enter them at the beginning of the school year like this. Now enter them like this. Well, then, now we're finding kids that have been entered since then have disappeared. So they're there one day, they're not there the next day. We can't ask students. I mean, our top priority is student education. If students can't access programs because of how they were entered and it disappears, we're not meeting the needs of our kids. If our teachers can't access the IEP goals, if teachers are now having to handwrite midterm reports, if teachers can't access the grade book, if they can't access the things that they need to share with their students or to report to parents on how students are doing, we're not meeting the needs. Yeah. And that's the people in the front line, and that's why we're here. I know that, like, I'd like to borrow Sarah Lee's, but she left her magic wand. We can't wave a magic wand tonight to fix this. But by not fixing it or not claiming that it's an issue and then saying, here's what we need to do to prepare it, we're not doing what's right. And as far as substitutes go, I'm sorry, with what we pay a substitute, and keep in mind, some of these individuals I know are coming into these rooms, they may only have a high school diploma, but they're willing to be there for us. But to put the burden back on them and go, you write the lesson plans after we show you once to how to do it, or you'll do these IEP goals, I'm sorry. Yes. Certified, experienced teachers, that's a lot to ask them to do in an ESE classroom, especially, what if I'm in an ESE classroom and I've got kindergarten through fourth graders sitting in there, and they're all on different levels that they're working. Yeah. Just the fact that I'm coming in every day and managing that classroom and providing any form of instruction without a background in this, and now you want me to take on all these issues, I can't approve this.
Yeah.
I'm not on board. Sorry.
Yeah, I understand. Well, let's give Mr. Eggener a chance to. Is this the first time you've heard about this, Mr. Eggener, and what are we doing about it, or what plan is in place? Can you share any?
I actually,
I'm having difficulty in even grasping exactly what you're, you know, discussing with that, and I'm not sure if there's any of the staff that are here want to discuss that. Did you? Are you?
Yes. You ready?
Yes.
Okay.
I have,
if you just kindly state your name and title for the record.
Yes, I'm Kim Gilliland. I'm the Director of Exceptional Student Education, and I will only speak to the ESC concerns that I heard, and I hope I've captured them on my notes well enough to address some of them. I'm certain that we can't answer every question or concern that we have, but I can start with some of the facts. We have spent a very long time working with Focus outside of the meetings that you probably sat in when you were working within the district. There was a typical Focus team that was working on all things student information system, and we branched off of that to create the SSS system, which is the student support system. That holds an electronic 504 process, all of our IEP processes such as eligibility, consent, the IEP program or IEP processes, manifestation, all of those types of meetings that we hold for students who are suspected or who have disabilities. And then it also holds a mental wellness platform that Dr. Amy Hall and her team worked on that holds our threat assessment and counseling notes and things along those lines. So within our Focus development, our IEP forms and processes change significantly. We had been writing on a program, an IEP writing program, that was very outdated, and it was working off of a platform that was essentially crumbling and couldn't support all of the changes that we were hoping to do over the last few years. So some of the changes that rolled out at the time of Focus's rollout actually were changes that we had wanted to do based on needs and that we felt that the district needed over time. And one of those was the progress reporting. In the past, we had reported progress through a letter stating to families that the student was making progress toward meeting all of their IEP goals. That's not adequately sharing information to tell the parents how the students are progressing towards each of those goals. They did this year, teachers and case managers did have to do this process through a Word document, which we created to mirror the new Focus form. So it would not be looking different when we transitioned in. And it is a phase-in approach for students as their IEP annual reviews come up or as we hold interim IEP meetings for students. New IEPs would be written in the new Focus system, and then moving forward from there, the progress reports can be done in Focus. We did have case managers have to list some demographic information, which was minimal: grade, school, the student's name, and I believe their alpha. And then moving down for progress reporting, they didn't have to write out the goal, just the number of the goal, so that the parent can correlate goal number one with their IEP that they would have had from the last meeting, and then they would have to report progress for each of those goals, which would just be on a key, which was indicated by a letter. And then there was a space there then also for teachers to list additional information that might be helpful for families to know about how their student is progressing on each goal. That process, I spoke at length with the union, with Ms. Albert. I heard from many teachers. I spoke with cabinet-level folks about how can we help without removing the requirement. This kind of progress reporting on each goal is what many, if not all, other districts in the state are doing. We had found an out by doing the letter to meet the letter of the law, but not necessarily the intent. And so this is our attempt to phase in. Through talking with union members, teachers, and cabinet, we did come up with extending the deadline for getting that those progress reports completed by about a week and a half, but it didn't delay the access to families because teachers would be printing those on their own and then handing them out at the same time that report cards would be going home, which is the requirement.
So, with this, so with this phase-in approach, how long approximately does it is it taking a teacher to complete this new process with via the Word document. And I'm happy to, like, I believe letting parents know more specifically, you know, what their child is working on and what they are mastering or not mastering is, you know, best practices. Mm-hmm. But how long is this taking roughly to do, you know, a single child, and then looking at what their caseload is? Mm-hmm. And with that, did we build in any time? Because here's where it comes down to. So if I'm if I'm a separate class ESE teacher, mm-hmm. and even say I only have, 10 students, mm-hmm. if this is taking me an hour per student, which is 10 additional hours, what are we doing? Like, where are they finding that 10 hours? Because I don't want them to miss out on, kids to miss out on 10 hours of instruction so mm-hmm. that the teacher gets 10 hours to do this. But at the same time, and look, there isn't a day that I didn't take stuff home to do as a teacher, okay? Mm-hmm. And that was a choice of mine. But the fact that we're phasing in a new system, it's not a choice for me to spend mm-hmm. that 10 hours to get this done. Sure. So then where does that 10 hours fall? Or if I'm the speech teacher, how long is it taking? And I may have a caseload of 40 students. Or if I'm the resource, what's that taking? Because what I'm hearing is it's time. And mm-hmm. where are we getting that time for these teachers? Yes, we may need to move to this to meet the letter of the law, but we see a big picture, but did we look at all the pieces and parts of what this was going to take and where the burden was falling?
Yes, and I appreciate that input, and I do understand that this new process is taking more time than clicking a button to print a letter. But I can say that if teachers have had access to the IEP goals and have been instructing to that and collecting data on that student's progress, then a matter of sitting down to put the information in should take 2, 5, maybe maximum 10 minutes per student. If you don't have the data available, if you're not as familiar with the student's goals, then that process is going to take you much longer.
So is it a template?
Miss Wright had a question I wanted to get in.
Actually, I want to get, because I'm lost. Are you asking her about migration, where teachers are saying they don't have access?
Well, first we're talking about they were instructed for midterms over the report cards that they no longer can go in and click on things to print what needs to go home. So is it a blank Word document? Is it a template?
It is a template Word document, and it came with step-by-step instructions for how teachers would fill out that information. Exactly. So they're filling out about 4 pieces of demographic information. They're putting a 1 for goal 1, a letter to say that is on a legend that tells the parent how that student is progressing, and they can put in comments if they choose for each goal.
So I think my question is really the back end. So with all of the new technology that we're implementing, why wasn't this information migrated?
Excellent question. So, and you did ask that question. I'm sorry, Ms. Haynes.
That's
I got sidetracked
lost,
by the progress report. So thank you for bringing me back there. So migration was definitely a huge topic of conversation. Because the forms and focus for the IEP are significantly different than our old format, there was no way to migrate the old information into the new forms. Because when you migrate information, you have to... I'm not the computer techie person, but you have to say this box goes over here on this form and do all of that. And our form information doesn't communicate in that way. It's not lined up in the same way that the new forms are. Our second option for migration was to take a PDF of each of the students' most recent IEP and then to upload it into the student's file. That, again, was not something that our technology team felt that they would be able to do, to be able to hard code information from CrossPoint IEP system and push it over to Focus, that migration could not happen. They did migrate all of our CrossPoint student information data. So students who are ESE are showing up ESE in the student information. Students SPIN, which are the types of services that they're receiving, are showing up in the student information. their matrix numbers that we use for funding, all of that information was migrated over. It's just that they don't have electronic access to the most recent IEP. So they have to go to the CUME file to get a copy of that IEP and function from that, which is how ESC teachers have operated for all of our lives until technology came along and made it so simple.
All the money we just spent, I just got to say that. You could do if ands when I know about coding. Mm-hmm. It's really hard for me to believe that we can write a code to transfer that information as it relates to the form. That's really hard for me to believe. Mm-hmm. Now, they may not have wanted to do it, the focus people, but that's hard to believe.
The information, the way in which the information was kept in our old IEP system was not a direct correlation to the way that new information is kept in the new IEP forms. But then the migration of a PDF version, which was the second option, our technology team had to pull down each individual IEP, name it in a certain way where it could be transcribed to a certain student's file, and that was not something that our team determined they could take on.
I see Mike coming here. So
good evening.
Yeah, you want to state your name and title, and I'm assuming you want to address.
Well, one thing I'm doing definitely is obviously taking notes for sure, because I want to make sure we're giving accurate and explicit information and detail to it. So I'm taking this note back and that question specifically to go back in, because much of this was managed differently, right? So I'm taking down that question, how was it done, why was it done, why was it not done, as far as migration, your if and then statements, to assist in that conversation on that end, and especially with what Jamie has brought up as well that Kim has been addressing on the ESE side. A lot of what I know we're hearing on the focus end is related to a new system, but at the same time, there are issues coming in, and they're being addressed daily. And so as they come in, we are, as you heard Ms. Albert say, when I hear something, we're going right back and I'm having conversations between the company and our end, whether it's our functional leads that are coming into the conversations or our technical leads. So it's not something that we are letting linger. There are always eyes and hands on the process. But much of what you find in systems as they go is when they're in production, you start to find those little gaps. Then you test them back in the test, and you bring them back into production. But we are addressing as they're coming in. So I just don't want to leave anyone with these things are just out there lingering, and no one's doing anything about it. And I don't think that's anyone's interpretation here. I just want to make sure it's stated that way.
So it sounds like you're saying this is, I guess, that time of the year with grades and IEPs and reviews and...
This is the time of year you shave your head.
Well,
hair right out.
I understand that, but with a new system, all these things are being revealed now, all these gaps. But what I think what we want to know is, as you fix these things, will they reoccur during the next grading period or the next IEP meeting? You know, I mean, are these just things that we didn't anticipate, and now we're fixing it, but do we have to keep fixing it?
Well, I think also what we're seeing, too, is some of the, let's call them standards of what the system would do will maintain the standard way of doing it with a little bit of customization. What we're seeing in some other areas, too, is we're bringing a lot into one area, one specific resource, whereas in the past, as you heard, the IEP system was not designed and written by the company we bought when we bought the student information system or the grade book. That was all separate. So we're bringing them all together, and then we want that data to flow and talk appropriately. The crosswalking is really what Kim was alluding to, where you have a field and it may be named name, but the field over on the other side is not name, and the way to make it work, it's also not spelled or added in correctly to even begin that work. That's kind of what we're seeing on that end, to develop a newer manner of doing things in one system.
Okay. Ms. Haynes, then Mr. Cologne, then Ms. Cuthbert.
Okay, so
I would be typing.
IEPs were not migrated.
Correct.
The format for how they used to report to parents is no longer the format we're using.
Correct, and intentionally so.
Okay.
Yes.
And I'm good with that. But I still go back to this. it's the time with a new format and needing time to do that. Also, not having their IEPs migrated, they now have to go to a CUME folder to a paper copy of an IEP. And, okay, I know 30 years ago, 20 years ago, that's what we did. But that the group that we have teaching right now, that's not been their process because they've had it electronically to them. I hear you saying that, okay, so when their IEP review comes up, whether you do a special review or you do their yearly review, that that's the time at which you'll address putting the IEP in. Who's putting the IEP in at that time, and how long is that taking? And if that's the case, which, because I know, having also been in ESE and been PST and all that, that we worked really hard to, like, get a lot of IEPs done at the springtime, you know, so, mm-hmm. Well, at one time we did.
Yes.
We've gone through different cycles, but who's typing all that information?
I understand the question.
And, like, are we putting that on the classroom teachers?
No. So let me share with you, when I talk about...
I also heard clerks at schools or registrars.
Clerks at schools and registrars should not have editing access, so hopefully that's not the case. So let me share with you. When I talk about phased in, by June 30th of 2020, so at the end of this fiscal year, and probably before that, probably towards the end of this actual school year, every student will have had their annual review. So all students within our district by that time should have a Focus IEP. The only students who potentially would not would be a student who transfers in very late in the year, and we would have to hold an IEP meeting for them anyway to get their information on Volusia forms. So that's the phase-in period of time that we're talking about. In 1 year's time, we'll have all updated information. You mentioned who is responsible for putting the information in. So the case managers, which are our ESE teachers, have the same responsibilities in the new system as they did in the old system. They're responsible for writing the present levels of performance for each of their students on their caseload. They're responsible for writing goals and objectives for the students. And they cannot enter in the accommodations, but they are to come to the meeting prepared to talk about appropriate accommodations for the IEP team to consider. The DPS and the IEP facilitators are the ones taking on the majority of this transcription that is having to take place. And that is typical when a student is new. When they are just found eligible for the first time for ESE services, the DPS is doing the majority of the IEP writing information, with the exception of those items that I talked about for case managers. Now, the present level information, the form looks different, but the content and information is the same. In terms of the goals and objectives, we used to have a goal bank. We have taken much criticism from Florida Department of Education about that goal bank being not individualized and very specific to the standards, where it should be aligned to the standards, but it shouldn't be a regurgitation of the standard. And so those goal banks have been removed, and we have now given ESE teachers or our case managers information about how to write a measurable goal. We have support that is available to any case manager who needs it. Our DPS, our program specialists, and our district-level ESE staff are making ourselves available to provide that support when needed.
Ms. Haynes, let me move over to Mr. Cologne, okay?
And then we'll come back. So going back to the original question, we realize, and I don't think anybody disagrees, that whether we knew it in advance or didn't, are adding extra burden to the folks who are involved with this process. So going back to the original question, I guess this is more a question for the superintendent to take back. How do we, because the teachers are going to get it done. That's a given. They're going to do it. They stay however late they have to. But if we know that we have added that additional work, how, and I don't know the answer to that, do we consider their time? Because it sounds like even for your case managers, those folks will never leave because they have PSTs, they have IEP meetings, and they have to do all of this. Listening to what you're saying about the bank, you know, before you pick 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, now you physically have to write that out. And again,
that's not a bad thing, but right. I think we all agree that there is time. And when we talk about our vacancies, quite frankly, we really, whatever we can do, and I know you described scanning a PDF document in, with all due respect, that's not that hard this day and age. And so where it may not have been convenient for somebody at one point to do that, quite frankly, if you had two people who sat for a week and did that for all your IEPs, you'd get them in a file. Again, it's just something to, but we've added that extra work, and so I think it's valid, and it goes to Ms. Albert's point, you know, for our most vulnerable folks who are struggling because they're short, you know, they're having to cover. Now, you mentioned something about substitutes doing this as well. Is that even, I mean...
I would like to speak, that is one reason why I actually stood up to come forward.
So you'll validate that. That's fine then.
We did send out information in the last area superintendent weekly message support or reminders to principal. This is not new information, just tips and reminders to principals for when there are long-term coverage that's needing to happen in an ESC classroom, the way to make sure that substitutes are supported through ensuring that they have lesson plans that are provided to them by certified teachers. We also offered up our program support folks, which are TOAs that work at the district level, supporting the schools to help with that kind of planning, instructional planning, as well as lesson planning. Substitutes should not be writing lesson plans unless they are a certified teacher, and they should not be writing IEP goals. They do have an obligation, however, in a longer-term setting to be implementing an IEP, the accommodations, working towards helping the student reach goals, but they have to have certified teachers to help them to know how to do that. And so a substitute, we can't ever sit at an IEP meeting and say, oh, I'm sorry your child didn't make progress because you have a substitute in your room. We have to come to an IEP team table to say you had a substitute in your room and your student is making progress because we've supported that substitute in these ways and the student has still successfully made progress. So the information that was shared were helpful hints to principals to ensure that they have a plan for those vacancies that are still on their campuses, the 16 that are still out there, with people to reach out to for support if they need help in developing that plan.
I'm good, thank you.
Okay, you're good. And Ms. Cuthbert?
Now that Mr. Wyckoff has left, who is making decisions about focus?
So right now we have a project core team, a core group of individuals who were working alongside of Josh Wyckoff when he was here as a project manager, and we've extended that core team out to include a few more different departments that have pieces and parts inside of Focus. And so then we have conversations with our functional leads that have input for changes, issues, concerns.
Well, then who's making the decisions? Who's having the... For example, you're getting calls in. For example, when is the portal open for teachers to enter their grades?
Mm-hmm.
Because there were problems with progress reports. And I talked to a teacher this weekend. She's all ready to enter her grades, but the portal's not open. She can't move forward. When is the portal open for them to start entering grades? And who makes that decision? Is that decision known throughout all the academic areas? Does everybody know? Do your USAs who handle the phones, are they aware of that? Are principals aware when their teachers can start accessing to put in their grades? And there are problems with conduct grades. A lot of people don't know how to put in a conduct grade when it comes to the progress reports as well as the end of the quarter grades. So I have great concerns on Monday. I think principals should leave teachers alone the whole day so they have time. If they have a problem, they can seek help and not have the level of frustration that somebody can say, I just don't want to deal with this anymore. I'm out of here. Everyone needs to know if there's a problem entering grades, who do they call?
Mm-hmm.
Do they contact their
what is it, their
DLTO.
Digital person, DL?
TL.
Yeah, your DLTs?
TL.
Okay, thank you. DLTO. I get all the acronyms crazy. Thank you. It's been a while since I went through training.
No worries.
Do they contact them? And what about that teacher's accessibility? Mm-hmm. So we're adding a lot of levels of frustration because we don't know who to call, who makes the final decision to say, this is what we're going to do. You young person, you contact all the principals. This is the protocol. Follow step 1, 2, and 3. Mm-hmm. Do we have that in place?
Yeah.
So because that's what people need. They need to be able to follow that process.
Why am I
so there's about 17 chances. Questions in
okay.
there.
Okay.
So let me back into noticed. All of those.
I've been waiting a long time.
No worries. Got it out. So actually, we had a meeting several weeks ago where we had Ms. Albert attend, and we talked about the time for the posting window to extend it even further out than what was normally or used to be in the prior years. Typically, what would have been this Wednesday to next Monday, and then Monday would have been done, teacher duty day, have them in by 5, and then the rest of the week is the rest of the week. What we were working toward was trying to open a window yesterday, Monday, to work to Monday, so to give a full week. We ran into concerns with the report card template and much of how the data is kind of populated in each field over the weekend. So what we decided to do was let's postpone the grade report window to open tomorrow. So I feel like I'm announcing opening tomorrow is the grade reporting window to start Wednesday and end next Wednesday. So they'll have the same amount of time we would have had, and as we agreed to go and extend out. And then me and Ms. Albert talked about it today as well. We think that's kind of a good minimum to start with as far as a length of time. Of course, getting into a new system, learning new processes, what we're trying to do with this grade report is mimic or mirror as much as possible the progress report process. So that way, whether you're doing progress reports, midterms, or grade reports, the process to do so remains the same. So you're not learning two different ways, which in the past it would have to be that way. So that's one thing we're working to address is extending that time so they have not only all day Monday, but they will still have from tomorrow till the following Wednesday to kind of work through those grades. Again, it's always best practice, and I'm not going to float this as why can't anyone do this, but you want to maintain your grades, but that's not an excuse either if, as we're hearing, some issues around accessibility or they lost grades or so on and so forth. So we want to make sure we're maintaining those issues and working through them. So I'm not going to put that as the reason why. You mentioned point of contact. So even in the past, when Mr. Wyckoff was the project manager, it wasn't Josh Wyckoff making the decision ultimately overall. He had to bring in the core, the groups, and the functional leads, because the functional leads are the owners of the process of which the system is working toward. So when we talk about a point, the point is me, Mike Cicchetti, Director of Technology Services and Innovation, email. So I'm the point, but I bring in the project core and outside functional leads to make sure that the conversation and the directions and the decisions are made and vetted, so it's not just one person has made this call and that's how it's going to be. So it's still a very in-depth conversation to make sure the system is working as intended for all, not just one. But I think I answered 17 and 3.
I just want to make sure that information gets to the campus level.
Absolutely.
So teachers know, because it's getting the information last minute. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because it's a new implementation, but teachers are getting information last minute, or we can't do this, we're now going to do that. And it has created a huge frustration level.
Okay.
Especially, and as we talk about this, I'd like to switch another issue, the master schedule. Because people are still adding to the master schedule, and especially events, and when are the fairs, when are the fact fairs, everything is adding, and there's so many distractions to student learning. We have to have that as our priority. With all the, and we all know that we have to do code red two drills. We have to do fire drills. We have to have donuts for dads, elementary. We have new textbooks. We have a lot to handle. And then when you start just throwing all the competitions and the events and everything that kids have to do, especially the young ones, is there a way that we can have, like, August 1st as a cutoff date? If you don't show up, your event's not on the calendar. So everybody knows, principals, teachers know throughout the whole year how to schedule all their events. Mm. That is one less distraction for people. Everything is set. Mm-hmm. Can that happen with our new system?
I don't think that's a focus or an SIS system solution. However,
it's probably not a system issue.
I think
no, no.
Mike Cicchetti will not be making that call, but...
Yeah, I want to get back to Ms. Haynes, who started this lively conversation.
I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's all good.
Okay. So let me go back to Ms. Gillen for a minute, then I'm coming to you, Mike. Okay. Ms. Gillen, so with all this being new and it being phased versus, you know, migrated or whatever... How was that communicated to teachers, and were they given any training that they needed to truly know what the expectation was since IEPs were not migrated and things like that? Mm-hmm. You know, was there a plan up front? Did we start from day one providing them with that communication? You know, and are we doing a good job of holding their hands or supporting them? Or did we just kind of give it and then walk away?
Well, I can share you this. When we went live with our new system, I was diligent about sharing information with our related service providers, so school psychologists, social workers, our SLPs, our case managers, our district-level support folks, about the system is live. And I shared with people at that time that the IEPs would not be present in the system, and not until a new IEP was written in the system would they have access. And then I at that point referred people to the pink folders. So this was before school started. Teachers probably received it around pre-planning. The first round of training that teachers received, and all teachers with the exception of our elementary VE mild and self-contained EBD teachers received face-to-face training, which was our SSS navigation, how to get around in the IEP system, not just IEP, but that side of the portal, and then how to access the pieces of how to access and enter in information for their portions of the IEP that they're responsible for. All of the other role groups, speech and language, our vision and hearing teachers, our social workers, our school psychologists all received training when they first came back on calendar, which was before the teachers' pre-planning. So we had people trained up, the majority of people trained up before school started. Now, we did have about 300 teachers, our elementary VE mild teachers, as well as our self-contained EBD teachers at elementary. They were not able to participate during pre-planning because they had to engage in the curriculum for the new math curriculum. So they engaged in that training instead. They received an online training option at our last regional ERPL. Between the beginning of the school year and that digital offering, we had DPS that were setting up times for them to have office hours, for people to come in to get support. Before our elementary, those 300 elementary folks were able to get the official training, they were able to write their information in a Word document and provide it to the DPS so the DPS could input that information in through a cut and paste option, which isn't as easy as you would think. but we, our DPS and IEP facilitators and other teachers and related service providers who were trained up really took an all-in approach. We had people creating their own training documents. We had click sheets that were made available, which are step-by-step, click here, enter this information here to all teachers before school started as well. So it depends on your learning style. If you needed face-to-face and you were one of those elementary teachers and you didn't have those other options available, training came too late for you. But if you can sit down with and feel comfortable sitting down with a partner or sitting down with a click sheet, you had the information from the beginning to get to what you needed to be able to do the information or to do the process that you needed to do.
Okay, thank you. So, Mike, grade book or grade, no, we're not in grade book now, grades disappearing. Like yesterday, teachers had no grades. They had inputted their grades, but now grades were gone, and mm-hmm. they could not access to see what students were missing work. What happened?
So I'm going to get that detail. I know an email came out, so I want to make sure that what is said and spoken and provided is exactly what it was, just so we're all on the same page. But basically, I'm going to try to baseline this. Essentially, what happened on that end, there was a schedule change or a master schedule adjustment, and that threw off the load back into focus. And so with that schedule change, it seemed to remove the record. And so when the record was sought to come back in, Focus wasn't able to capture that data again, repopulate. And so a conversation happened with that teacher at that end. So I haven't heard teachers. I've heard teacher, and that's one specific example. But that's where I want feedback and know who, where, so we can go back into the log and check. But I want to make sure I'm going to give you that exactly the way it happened, so that way we're all aware of what it took and what happened. Digital tools access. So specific to yesterday, what happened there was a report run, and that report basically had duplicate accounts created. So Jamie Haynes, Jamie Haynes 2. And so Jamie Haynes 2 became priority and not Jamie Haynes. Jamie Haynes had students. Jamie Haynes had the roster of digital access and access into the system. Jamie Haynes 2 did not. And so we had to, that was an overnight load, automatic. So you come in the next day, that automaticity had happened. So it was clean up for the rest of the day to go back in, work directly with Focus and say, I need to write Jamie Haynes in. And it was specific to a grade level and to a number of schools.
I heard fifth.
Fourth and fifth. Yep.
Okay.
It was about 600 total staff. That was the number that I had that was provided. So about that number that morning showed I can't get into Focus. And it wasn't you couldn't get in. It was the other you based on the load that couldn't get in. So we removed the duplicate, the right one, to make sure that that access was brought back in. Now what that triggered overnight was last night after 6:30, we paused the nightly load. So then this morning when the load kicked in, recaptured everybody correctly, the digital tools access. So if you had McGraw-Hill or HMH or Pearson or Waterford, that access wasn't there today. That was worked through for the morning through the afternoon and was corrected. But that was all triggered from a report that ran duplicates.
Okay, so
grade level.
Is that explain why? So any student that started on day one, mm-hmm. you know, that information came out of Crosspoint over into Focus. My understanding is they've not had glitches accessing their programs. It's been students that have changed schools, entered since that time, or where we've built a new class or mm-hmm. taken students from a class and put them in, and it's those changes or those students being entered that's the group of students that are falling off of not having access and these things are happening. So what's, like, how can we correct that? Because, like, tomorrow if 55 kids enroll in Volusia County across the school and the registrar thinks they put them in correctly, mm-hmm. and then next week they lose all access and all programs again, why is it working for the kids that originally started and not anyone that we've made a change to?
Okay, and I'll clarify that, and I'll get that information to make sure that what response is there is the reality, because what students are coming in, is it happening, what are the common traits, is it happening to students who were registered back in the fall or spring, late spring last year into this new system and so on, or migrated? But at the same time, we're tying all resources and course records to a single one roster, and so that data feed, it has adjustments that need to take on if Kim is the teacher of record today, but then she's absent and there's a substitute, or she's not even a teacher here anymore and we don't have a certified teacher and we had to build a different fall staff member, a vacancy, so to speak, so that way that resource still had a teacher of record because the roster comes down from there. So Let me go back and get that specific information on how and when and why they would lose access and who's the common
So does everyone now have access to their grades? Like, that is reinstated for mm-hmm. the teachers that lost access to grades.
Yes. From what I know right now, at 6:46 p.m., that's okay. My understanding.
Mr. Cologne.
Thank you, James.
So, you know, for me, I understand some of this because this is my world. However, to our end users, it sounds like a lot of. So my question is Focus the company engaged with us locally right now to help us through these tweaks, or are they still distant? Are we still going through Cherry Roads?
So, yeah, so that's two separate projects. So I'll okay. clarify. So student information system is Focus, and okay. so we do have a primary project manager with Focus who does live locally, not in Volusia, but close to. And they do come on site once a week, and they do bring in teams during all firsts. So first report card, first progress report, first survey reporting. We have staff here training, working through, so that way if we have an issue, we go, hi, Kim. How are you? You're here. And then most of the other time, it is via email directly through the PM to make sure that their contacts, their leads,
right.
are there
so,
for us.
So, again, having worked in many projects, to me, it almost sounds like we need to re-engage this vendor to come and help us more actively than in the maintenance way that we're doing this right now, because this isn't working. Yep. And I appreciate your efforts. I mean, you guys are doing everything you possibly can, but the vendor's on the line to perform, and quite frankly, I'm pretty sure they want this to go smoothly. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, and again, I'll turn this way, yep. re-engaging the vendor, even if it costs us, because the reality is that, you know, this isn't working. And sometimes having those resources engaged on a daily basis to hear the problems coming in, not just an email, to live it, to go out to a school and say, hey, what do you think about this, and find and engage the folks who are actually doing the work. You know, in my world, you know, we work with tech support or our AIT, mm-hmm. and, you know, sometimes I'll write the guys and say, look, just come to the hospital. I will let you round with me. I will let you ask nurses. And I tell you, the things they see when they're actually here, yep. it's like things they didn't even know, because they're so isolated in their sterile world that when they actually come out to a facility, they see what the end user is going through. So it almost sounds, I mean, again, look, we really need to re-engage this vendor and get them to truly help us overcome some of these obstacles, because this is, it's rough. I mean, and I'm learning this as I'm listening, and I can't imagine, which then goes back to that original question, which, you know, honestly, I can't answer. That's a question for the superintendent to take back. But, you know, it seems like we have a lot of, you know, and it goes to what Ms. Albert said. There's just a lot that we know about that's unaccounted for in our normal practice. So that was it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further comments?
This one. When we started Crosspoint and Gradebook, it was simple compared to what Focus is. And Focus was supposed to simplify. And I don't see it happening. I see it creating a lot of frustration. So I don't know if it's because it's miscommunication or the lack of decision-making or having the point, whatever decision, it needs to be rectified really fast. So are we going to leave teachers alone on Monday so they can work all this out?
The request, and I had a discussion with Ms. Albert about this, the discussion was to increase the window by which people would have to put in the grades, which we agreed to. And then because of not planning for that to be the case, and hoping to have done it earlier, we were going to open it up on Monday, but we weren't prepared to, that Ms. Hazel, who's not here because her husband's getting a knee surgery, so she's not here to speak up about this, she was going to survey the principals and give them the recommendation that the teachers be left alone. But because we hadn't planned on it, we didn't want to issue a blanket thing without asking a principal first. Some may have been going to have some data chats. I don't know. Others may have had something more critical. So you didn't want to give out an order without checking first to see if something was going on. So she is communicating to the principals, urging them to give them this time. And the reason I paused when you gave your description of some of the things going on is because it's widely, it's a very large agenda, and I have been alluding to you in print and communications to you that we have some work to do with implementation with this, and not only that, but the next phase, which will be delayed because we want to get it right and we don't want to go through the same kind of bits and pieces, whether it was the IEPs not being able to be loaded because it changed something, and then you'd have to have another meeting because the PDF is going to be different than the way it shows up in the system, or any of the other things we've been working through. I think any transition is difficult, and I'm not sure, you said it was a lot easier. I'm not sure it was a lot easier. I was here when several programs were instituted. I won't say their names, but we did not refer to them by the name they were given. And I remember the amount of time it took us to work through it. It's always a process where you discover things that aren't working as well as they should or what have you. And I know Mike was working to develop a comprehensive list to communicate on Friday. So as you can tell, they're well aware of the circumstances. There's some mitigation issues that are being put in place. Time is being expended, but the system today is not what the system will be 3 months from now as we phase in pieces.
I hope so.
And so some of the components of it aren't even activated yet because these issues have come up, and so it's slowed that down. So it does have a domino effect of how you get through that. So we will work through these as we can. We've been having some very detailed kind of summit meetings to discuss and lead on what needs to happen. I have discussed that we may need to add resources to this, and I've kind of warned you that we may have to get this right. We may have. I'm glad you mentioned about the vendor. That's really important, that we may have to contract with the vendor to have a more active participation, because the way it was scheduled out, we discovered issues that had not been anticipated. We discovered what we thought might be a routine way to have interfaces and to take those interfaces and have data transmit from one system to the other. And the interfaces haven't been what they should have been up to this point, or it hasn't been as easy to do. And so we're working on that in a very large spectrum. And I suspect we're going to have our moments before focus is fully activated, and I think that will naturally cause the second component to be implemented at a later date, maybe not even until summer, as we work to get it right. I will say that, I have to compliment staff because they take it personally that this isn't working as well as it should. They take it personally the impact it's having on teachers. I have to very much appreciate Ms. Albert and her efforts to try to represent the teachers, and let's give them more time, let's open up this window. She's come in and actually participated in how we did progress reports to learn the system, so when she talked about the concerns, she could do so from a knowledge base, not isolated people calling in about an issue. And Mike's trying to be very careful because some of the complaints that came in with issues were actually about user error or something that wasn't quite done right. And the number of help desk issues that came up, a lot of them were done within a minute and 40 seconds. Just because it's a new system, just because not all the training was done face-to-face, just because the person at the school who does the training didn't get around to everybody who had a question. So the issues you bring up are real. They're absolutely real. And that's why I didn't want to comment on it, because it always seems like you're trying to cover up something or de-emphasize it. No, these are real issues. They got to be fixed. We'll be phasing in the fixes as quick as we can with whatever resources we need. And we welcome input from teachers who are finding things that are working or not working. And we welcome work with the IEPs. I know a couple of the communications I've had, I seemed less sympathetic than I should have, in the sense that I'm such a dinosaur. I remember when I had a room full of students with disabilities, because I was given all, they didn't have a social studies ESC teacher, so I got them all because the kids had success with me. I lived with a big stack of pink folders. So automating things, there is a balance. You don't want to automate things so they don't mean anything. In other words, it's too easy to have drop-down menus and just pick, pick, pick. And that was one, and I know Kim has difficulty communicating this in an understandable way, because you're trying to balance what might be too much of an effort to place on a teacher versus it can't be the same thing for every student. And we get in trouble with that when that comes up at IEP meetings and you know, it's too easy just to click on something. You really have to know what that IEP says. You really have to, personally, as a teacher, I have to know those goals. And so we're trying to strike the right balance with it, but we're not there yet. And so right now we're trying to fix the system and extend the time period in which the job can get done. And then we'll have to report on the progress, and we will be transparent about the list Mr. Cacchetti is trying to put together that shows where we need to put in some fixes, and then we're going to try to do whatever we have to do to make that right.
Sounds good. Ms. Haynes?
And Mr. Ayer, I appreciate that, because I appreciate the fact that, you know, we're honestly saying that these are issues. What I've learned is it really all comes down to communication, and that's what I've told people for years. Even if the communication is not going to be the answer that they want, the fact that you communicated and you were honest and said, it's not working right now, or we have an issue with this, and here's the steps we're taking, or we may not have an answer on how to correct it. It may take us 6 weeks to correct it, you know, because we've learned that we've got to redo an entire thing. What I know about people is if you just tell them, if you tell them, we know it's an issue.
Right.
We're working on it. We can give you somewhat of a timeline, or we can't give you a timeline yet. It's so much better than acting as if it's not an issue, or, you know, covering things up. And the problem is we've worked under that pretense in some areas for a while, where it's been, oh, no, we tell everybody everything's fine, and it's got to be them, instead of just admitting that it's an issue. And so I appreciate the fact that you're admitting it, because I've always found if I just tell someone, it's broken, or, you know, we've got to get in touch with somebody, or it's going to take a month, or here's what's happening, they're more willing to accept it because they know that you are agreeing with them that it's got to be corrected. So I just, maybe what we need is some better communication, you know, and maybe even better communication to say if you don't remember the face-to-face training, or if the online training didn't work for you, it's okay to ask. Because I think sometimes what happens is, especially teachers want to do it right. And if they've already stepped through something and they have the impression that they're not supposed to ask for help, or I should not admit that I don't know how to do this, you know, they see that as a reflection on them. And I think sometimes we need to tell them, no, I'd much rather you ask me for help than to struggle through it. And I think we need to, and it's about building that trust and relationship and communication.
We'll leave it at that. Trust and relationships, and we're adjourned.
Thank you.
What do we got?
So we got assigned again.
Good night. Yeah, the other one's almost gone. That's why they want that one. That's why they want that one.
Is mine glass? No, that's blue. You can use that.
Both places.
Yes.
It's more of a challenge to just get our signatures correct.
CD.
Hey.